I wonder whether it's possible to have a conversation about that that somehow doesn't get dominated by personal experience, looking, if you like, at first principles, at the ethics, the philosophy of the proposal. I think we might try. I have become in recent months, as you know, absolutely fascinated by late life diagnoses, and it's the turn of dyslexia today to move into that space.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the bill legalising assisted dying in England and Wales will fall today in the last sitting of the House of Lords before the end of this Parliament. The legislation has run out of time because of hundreds of amendments tabled in the Lords. Supporters say it's been blocked by a small group of peers, but opponents say it's unsafe in its current form. Labour MP Kim Leadbeater, who introduced the bill, has told LBC she's been left feeling frustrated and deeply disappointed.
Over 1,200 suggested changes have been made to the bill. And what that means is, I think there's about 50 clauses in the bill, the House of Lords have only got to clause 7. They've spent hours and hours and hours of debate. And yeah, the opponents of the bill say that's because the bill needs this debate. But actually, I've sat in a lot of those sessions. There is a lot of talking around the issue, and a lot of those amendments are inappropriate and sometimes, sadly, quite cruel.
LBC has exclusively discovered that British nationals are being recruited online by hostile states to commit criminal acts in the UK. Our team went undercover and made contact with an individual claiming to be acting on behalf of Iran's intelligence service. The LBC investigation follows warnings from police after a spate of targeted attacks on Jewish premises in London. Speaking to LBC earlier this week, the Deputy Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Matt Jukes, issued this warning.
We're talking about sums of money which, in the end, if you're doing a 17-year prison sentence, when you're staring at the back of that prison cell door, really inconsequential sums of money. It's a mug's game. You're going to prison if you do that, because we are going to catch you.
It's reported the United States is considering reviewing its support for Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. That's according to a leaked internal Pentagon email seen by the Reuters news agency. Washington is understood to be looking at ways to punish NATO for failing to support the Iran war. The Trump administration and Downing Street are yet to comment. Analysis of cancelled operations in England suggests 1 in 10 are called off at the last minute because patients aren't prepped for surgery. The study also suggests around 4 in 10 late cancellations are potentially avoidable. And commuters in London are facing disruption as a 24-hour tube strike continues. Some underground lines have been suspended this morning and others are reporting severe delays. Members of the RMT union are walking out until midday in a dispute over moving to a 4-day working week. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 68 at £10,389. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a fine and settled day for large parts of the UK, feeling warm for many with a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market. One membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. Has there ever been a more perfect example of a question or a subject that is binary in essence, but incredibly complicated in reality? Than the assisted dying bill, the assisted dying story, the issue of assisted dying. Do you approve of it? Do you want it or not? Yes or no? And then, of course, reality kicks in. And in many ways, this highlights the dangers of populism, doesn't it? Simple answers to complicated questions, because it's not a simple question, even though at first glance it is binary. We can't currently even find much agreement on why it has failed to pass its way through Parliament. Has it been stymied by critics and opponents at the House of Lords level, where opponents of the bill are accused of delaying tactics? Or is it the case that the bill as it stood when it arrived there was not sufficiently substantive to provide the safeguards considered necessary by people who would otherwise be in favour of it? Have the debates exposed further problems with the legislation, or have the debates been used as delaying tactics to avoid the legislation altogether? It passed the House of Commons by a majority of 55 originally, in principle, and then it cleared the Commons on the 20th of June last year with a majority of 23. I don't know whether there's a word for this, but do you ever find that your view on something is created more by reaction to other people's views than it is by a sort of organic formation of your own view? Does that make sense? I think I could probably put that a bit better. It's as if I don't really know what I think about something. Very occasionally this happens, until I listen to what other people think, and that sort of frames me or gives me what I need. Jones the Engineer, formerly of this parish, now, of course, known on YouTube as Jones the Pilot, he once said something very wise by accident. He once said he hated the debates in the run-up to elections because the audiences weren't allowed to cheer or laugh or smile. And if you couldn't hear the audience cheering or clapping, then he didn't know whether a good point had been made or not. He didn't know what to think. And I tease him about that. But it's actually quite an interesting observation. Sometimes you need a bit of external impetus to kick in for your own thoughts and feelings to kick in on something. And on assisted dying, I'm a little bit embarrassed to tell you that my opinion changes according to the last person that I spoke to. Let me give you an example. Well, let me tell you exactly what I mean. I have taken calls in the past from people whose parents died really painful deaths, and who are absolutely adamant that they should have been spared the agonies of their final days, or hours, or weeks even. And I come off those calls convinced that assisted dying is not just acceptable, but necessary, that it is the humane course of action. And then I might encounter somebody. I encountered someone relatively recently who described themselves to me as a proper Catholic. They said, "I am a proper Catholic, so..." And at that point, my alarm bells start ringing. Because I think that religion always veers into its at least helpful territory when it involves telling other people what they have to do. And she was celebrating the imminent demise of the assisted dying bill because she said she was a proper Catholic. And I found myself thinking, well, I'm in favour of it then for different reasons. I'm not in favour of it because of the pain and the agony of people who would benefit from it. I'm in favour of it because I don't like the opponents. I don't like the arrogance of the opponents who think that their religious beliefs should somehow prevent other people from making life choices. It moves into the realm of abortion as well. The two great debates, if you went to a Catholic school in the 1980s, were euthanasia and abortion, because the church's teaching on both of them hinges upon the idea that life is not only sacred, but that it begins at the moment of conception. And if you want to believe that, that's fine. But you can't insist that everybody else has to live their lives according to your unprovable beliefs, I would usually argue. And the more you dig into this, or at least the more that you think about it, the more you realise how unhelpful it is to view it in a binary yes-no fashion. Adults expected to die within 6 months would be permitted to seek medical help to end their life, subject to certain safeguards. And that is now not going to happen after the House of Lords, for whatever reason, historians of the future conclude to be the truth, because the House of Lords has essentially slammed the brakes upon the democratic decision of the House of Commons. And it was a moral vote as well. There was no partisanship or party lines, but it was pretty close. So the more I lean into the idea that this was pretty clear, the more I wonder why the vote was so close. And the answer is ethics. Not Essex. Ethics. The answer is ethics. The answer is something about morals that are not necessarily born of unprovable religious beliefs, but are born of first principles, philosophy, thinking about humanity itself, thinking about human beings. And that's why I don't know if I mean this. Let me think. I know what you're thinking. Why doesn't he do this? Why doesn't he work this stuff out before he comes on the radio? I'll do it as a question rather than a statement. How helpful is it? It's either the entirety of the debate or none of the debate, isn't it? How helpful is it to hear from people whose family members have suffered terribly in their last months, because the legislation looks only at 6 months, so let's say in their last weeks, days or months. How helpful is it to depend upon that testimony? Because it will obviously swing your pendulum pretty violently, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it would be morally or ethically justified. I want to know today what you think, that's all. And I really want to know why. And I think it would be wrong of me, this is what I was wrestling with a minute ago, I would be wrong of me to say I don't want to hear from you if your opinion is informed by personal experience, because that would be not only a little bit wrong, it would also be slightly at odds with the ethos of this entire program. I am, as you know, always more interested in people capable of changing their minds. As a wise man once said, there is no point having a mind if you never change it. I spent some years thinking it was me that had said that, but it turns out Edward de Bono beat me to it shortly before he formed U2. I love that joke, by the way. I love that joke. And you can tell I love that joke because that's about the 10th time I've made it in the last 6 months. But it probably needs explanation, which means it's actually probably not a very good joke. But I'm always interested in swinging pendulums, or pendular, if you prefer. Because it's the most beautiful thing about having a brain, isn't it? Using it, exercising it to work stuff out and to think things through rather than to just take your instructions from your Uncle Bob's Facebook page or your favourite broadcaster or a newspaper and not really know why you think something. You just know that you do. So do you want to live in a country where assisted dying is legal? I want your thoughts on what has happened here. 0345 6060 973 is, as ever, the number that you need. On the question of the Lords essentially stymieing what happened, but it was only a majority of 23 in the first place, so there's clearly a lot of grounds for opposition to it. And I'd be very interested in examining those grounds. So tell me why you think what you think. But tell me first and foremost what you think. About why have other countries, do we know, why have other countries managed to implement this in effective ways while we apparently can't? You heard Kim Leadbeater a moment ago talking about an extraordinary number of tweaks and changes that have been imposed. More than 1,200 amendments were tabled in the House of Lords, which I think is a record for any bill introduced by a backbencher. And now we're going to get to the end of term. After 17 months since the original vote, we're going to get to the end of term and it ain't going to be law. It is 13 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I just want to, probably for the last time in a while, given that the legislation is now heading for the buffers, I just want to know why you do or don't want to live in a country where assisted dying is legal. I think I probably need more help with the arguments against than I do with the the argument for is almost always going to involve, I watched someone die in horrible circumstances, and I don't think anybody should have to go through that. And I think it is wrong and arrogant of me to suggest or to think, as I did before I came on air, that the conversation should be conducted without those contributions. Of course, they're crucial, they're key. But if you want to have a crack at, and bring religion into it if you want, but if you want to have a crack at reminding us or explaining why there is opposition to this idea, or why you are opposed to it. I'd be really interested to hear what you have to say. My view, such as it is, and every time you think there's a relatively simple way into some of these issues, you expound it, you articulate it, and you realise that it's not simple at all. I'll show you what I mean. My view was that if you are of sound body, then you are able to end your own life. You know, I mean, I don't need to go into details or draw you a picture, but if you are physically competent, if you are able, then you are free to do this in a variety of ways. And I think, oh yes, that's my opinion. But then I remember I was raised a Catholic, and taking your own life is a massive sin. You're not supposed to be buried on hallowed ground if you committed suicide, if you took your own life. So even if my faith were unquestioning, then even my simple attempt at answering the question on the grounds that, well, if I wasn't bedbound, I'd be able to do it, so why should a bedbound person be prevented from doing it? So even that doesn't stand up to the simplicity test. And then, of course, it involves somebody else helping. And that's where my opposition, such as it is, comes from. I mean, it's 52-48, but it's too serious a topic to indulge the infernal ratio. But I don't know that anybody should ever, even if they want to do it. I don't know. I've used to be fascinated as a kid by executioners. Probably because I spent so long studying Henry VIII. But also, was it Pierpoint? Was Albert Pierpoint the last hangman in this country? It's a memorable name. I was always struck by that. I mean, how does that process, how does that sit with you for the rest of your life? I think he wrote a memoir. And that idea that nobody should really be put in that position where they are taking money to end somebody else's life. And that's a view. That's an opinion. It's not something I can back up with facts or statistics or evidence. It's just one of the things that I, one of the things that I struggle with. So, I'll finish this introduction where it began. You can't think of a subject that proves more powerfully that what appears to be a binary question is often anything but. Because I say to you, should you be able to enlist medical help to end your life if you're terminally ill and you've got less than 6 months to live? And you say to me, yes or no. And then I say, well, hang on a minute. Let's have a think about this. Have you considered X? Have you considered Y? Have you considered Z? And you realise it's probably not, or possibly not quite as binary as you thought. 17 minutes after 10 is the time. Let's get the phone lines open. So, I mean, any angle you want on this, because there's a reason why these issues are beloved of university and sixth form debating societies. It's because they're really interesting. But of course, they are also matters of life and death for people directly affected. And what this means, we mustn't forget, is that some people are now being sentenced to 6 months of agony. That if the House of Lords had not held up this bill, they would have been spared. So I don't know how many people would have availed themselves of this opportunity had the legislation passed, but anybody who finds themselves in that situation in the next year or so is being sentenced to 6 months of unnecessary agony and misery. Their families are being sentenced to 6 months of avoidable agony and misery, watching a loved one die in hideous circumstances. And politicians had the opportunity to spare all of those people all of that pain. And the House of Lords has binned it. Oh, man. If you're under any doubt at all about the complex or nuanced nature of this, I hope you're not now. Tell me what you think. 0345 6060 973. And, of course, tell me why you think it.
LBC.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that, I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
20 minutes after 10 is the time. The assisted dying bill is set to run out of time today as the Lords hold the final debate on the subject, and that means it will not become law despite the House of Commons passing the bill that was necessary for that to happen 17 months ago. Your thoughts, actually? I could have just done that, couldn't I, 20 minutes ago? I could have just read out what I just said to you then and then added your thoughts and said the phone number. But that would be denying you the joy of a lengthy introduction or even a monologue. Tamara is in Telford. Hello, Tamara.
Hello, James. We've spoken before.
I know we have. You're famous. you occupy a very interesting room in the palace of my mind, Tamara. And do you know that you came up yesterday on my social media? I'm just going to see if I can find it, because the question that you answered, I think, the last time you rang in was about the existence of a constituency of people who fit that that here it is, yeah, there you go. So someone posted, let's discuss this person with genuine concerns about immigration who isn't a racist and is worth listening to. It's a creature constantly on the tongue of our sovereign politicians, ... And someone replied, I don't know any, but I did hear one called Tamara from Telford on James O'Brien's show. And there you go, you're famous.
There you go, I'm famous.
Anyway, that's not why you rang in today.
No, it isn't. I have personal, strong feelings on this issue, James.
Okay. Tell me why and tell me what they are.
29th of March 2012, my late husband woke up and he couldn't move. He'd had a brain hemorrhage during the night.
Good grief.
We went to hospital. He told me he wouldn't survive. We all said our goodbyes, and he did. He died in August 18. But he was severely disabled. From that point, he was hemiplegic, he was wheelchair-bound, and there were lots of occasions, James, where he went from a very independent man to being totally dependent. He said, Tam, just leave the tablets on the table. Oof. And, yeah, and that's how I could cope with the physical, those times were, and I was his sole carer. So, I'm very conflicted. Deep down, I believe in an assisted dying bill. I do. But the vulnerability I saw in that man, had he have had people around him that didn't want to care, it was hard work. For 6.5 years, I didn't sleep more than 3 hours a night.
Agreed.
Because I had to turn him. I had to make sure he didn't get pressure sores. I had to care for him. If he had a family or just people around him who didn't want that, couldn't afford to put him in the home or the care, in his vulnerable moments, you would have believed he didn't want to be here. But they were just vulnerable moments. So there has to be very high levels of safeguarding. So you can see why I'm conflicted, because I do deep down believe there has to be an option for somebody in the position where they don't want to go through the suffering. But there has to be really strong safeguards for it not to be taken advantage of. And that's where I don't believe the current bill had enough safeguards.
And that means that the House of Lords have acted, or the members responsible for the legislation not passing have acted both in good faith and correctly, in your view. And yet,
I'm not sure, because some of their reasoning isn't my reasoning.
Can I ask you a question that might be a bit tricky to answer.
You can ask.
No, I am. I'm just trying to get my words right. I'm not... Because what you describe, many people might say, well, that's no life at all.
I can answer that.
And yet, you know that he wanted to live that life with you.
I can absolutely answer that.
Go on then. Thank
you. It was in the first year, it was all about getting his head round it, care. I paid for a private neurophysio because they told me he'd never sit up, he'd never stand up.
Right.
By the end of the first year, he could stand up. He couldn't walk. He could take a couple of steps with me, but he couldn't walk. He fought hard, but he had his down moments. And the one day he said, you know, this isn't a life. I can't do what we want it to do. Well, me being me, and you've spoken to me, you know, I'm pretty determined. He'd always said to me, James, he'd wanted to go to Russia, but we'd never quite made it there. I took him to Russia.
Gosh.
We went on a cruise. It was the easiest way of doing it.
Yeah.
But I showed him we could have a life. It was a different life, and it was probably harder on me than him. But he was my husband. When he died, we'd been together 37 years. You don't give up on that, but not everybody has that. So did have a life.
That's a fascinating perspective, you know.
And what if?
Yeah, you did.
It was harder. It was harder for him because at 67 years of age, that's when it happened to him. Would you say you don't have a life if you'd have been born into that wheelchair? Of course you do. But they have a lifetime to get. That's all they know and get used to. He just had to get used to a different type of life.
Gosh.
For those 6.5 years that he survived.
That's beautifully put. Thank you. I mean, that's extraordinary. The way that you're thinking simultaneously about your own personal experience and about the path not taken, you know, the other you and the other life in which you wouldn't have had the resources, both human resources and material resources, and the people in that situation may end up taking a decision that they wouldn't take. If
it
they were in yours, and palliative care as well.
Easy.
Palliative
it
care
was,
as well. In you know, in a world where palliative care was perfect, this question would feel different as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And I was lucky in that I'm a resourceful woman. I'm a very determined woman. And I advocate. And but people who don't have that, they can be pushed down certain paths. I've seen it. You know, they told me I'd never get him home, James.
And if you'd
they
made your decision that day, you might have arrived, some other people might arrive at a very different decision in that circumstance than the one you arrived at, which I sense was to prove them jolly well wrong.
He was my husband. If I'd have had to have sold everything I possessed to get him home and cared for in the manner he deserved for his dignity, I would have done that.
Do you know, you rang in to talk... Oh, you've set me off now, ringing in to talk about assisted dying and ending up almost writing an ode to marriage.
Well, ode to marriage, ode to...
Love.
He was my soulmate, but also he begged me on occasions. Now, had I have believed... And this is why I believe in assisted dying.
Yes.
Had I have believed he couldn't have any quality of life, had I have believed he was in pain that he couldn't bear, I would have given him those tablets.
As an act of love?
Yes.
The final act of love, in fact.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
We had a pact that if he ever was on a machine keeping him alive, I was to turn it off. We had those conversations long before he was ill.
You will know this, that the legislation as it stood was only going to look at people with a terminal diagnosis and 6 months or less to live, albeit, as you've reminded us, sometimes a diagnosis or a prognosis can turn out to have been wrong. Other countries go much further than that, of course. Other countries, there's a story in the newspapers at the moment about a woman who lost her son, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
And who is absolutely healthy, but just doesn't want to live anymore. So she's off to a clinic in Switzerland. The more I listen to you, the more I wonder whether, and some of the contributions in the House of Lords seem to have been slightly disingenuous or slightly obstructive. I think Tanny Gray Thompson has argued that case very powerfully. But the more I listen to you, the more I wonder whether it is actually an almost impossible task to put in place the safeguards and loopholes that would reassure the people that need reassurance.
I think it would never be perfect, but I think there are ways and means of those safeguards being put in place.
Yeah. I mean, they have to be.
Other countries do it.
That's what I mean, yeah. Other countries do it, although we can't know for sure that they do it to the satisfaction or to the threshold that we would like to see in place. Thank you. And I really mean thank you. Thank you for a whole bunch of reasons, Tamara, because somehow you've managed to turn a very sad story into a very uplifting experience listening to you tell it. And that love is palpable. It may be an odd thing to say, but I hope you don't mind me saying you were both very lucky to have found each other.
Absolutely. And I miss him every day.
I bet
and
you do.
The statement I would make about it's not about what you have, I would give up everything for 5 more minutes.
Oh, Tamara. You were already a legend on this programme.
I'm not sure about that.
Your legendary status now confirmed for the ages. Tamara, have a lovely weekend. Thank you so much. 10:30 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The bill legalising assisted dying in England and Wales will run out of time to pass all of its stages in Parliament today. Supporters say it's been blocked by peers in the House of Lords, but opponents say the legislation is unsafe. It's reported the United States could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. A leaked Pentagon email suggests that Washington is drawing up ways to punish NATO allies for failing to support the war in Iran. And official figures show retail sales in the UK rose by 0.7% in March. It was driven by a spike in demand for fuel as prices rose following the start of the Iran war at the end of February. LBC weather, a fine and settled day for large parts of the UK, feeling warm for many, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Experience electric performance like never before with Polestar Maidstone at Lipscomb. Discover bold Scandinavian design, cutting-edge technology and a drive that's as powerful as it is refined. For a limited time, enjoy exceptional value with 0% finance across the Polestar 2, Polestar 3 and Polestar 4 and savings of up to £5,000. Visit lipscomb.co.uk to explore the range and book your test drive. Make the switch to electric with confidence at Polestar Maidstone at Lipscomb and drive the future today. Offer ends 30th of June. No minimum deposit required. T's and C's apply.
There comes a time in your life when you need to make a change, to start a new chapter. It's time to consider a residential park home bungalow from Ecos Group. Castleview Court in Pevensey is a peaceful gated community for those aged over 45, set in a stunning location close to all local amenities. You can enjoy a stress-free move with up to 100% part exchange on your existing property with free site fees for your first year. Make that lifestyle change today and join us at our open weekend on the 25th and 26th of April at Castleview Court, Pevensey Bay, Pevensey. Or visit ecosgroup.co.uk. That's ecosgroup.co.uk.
Notice the change in your hearing? We'll get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Caulfield.
And I'm Joni Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Story.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:33 is the time. I think that one of the pushes towards retirement, should that day ever dawn for me, will be when I don't have that sense of a story being absolutely fascinating, but I can't quite see the phone in. Because normally that's when I put my thinking cap on and try to come up with a way that we could talk about it together rather than just leave it languishing in the news bulletin. And that mention in that news bulletin there of the American, the US, the Trump regime looking at ways to punish fellow NATO members for not joining them in what will almost certainly turn out to be war crimes. It's an extraordinary turnaround, isn't it? But the Falkland Islands, I don't know how old you are. I'm 54. Is it 54 or 53, Keith? I can never remember. I know it's extraordinary. I look much younger. But it's all the moisturiser. belong to a generation for whom the Falklands War has an extraordinary status. My godfather, I remember, had a map on the kitchen wall, and his children, some of my best friends growing up, would have pins in it tracking the progress of the task force from Portsmouth, I suppose, to the South Atlantic, and moving the pins as the task force. Every morning over breakfast, they'd move the pins on the wall chart, and we went to stay with them. And it was, a fairly binary battle. It was a bit straightforward. British people having their territory invaded by foreign soldiers, and British forces turning up to repel the foreign soldiers. It had a sort of commando comic simplicity to it that also influences my generation. But I can't see a phone in because I don't even know what it means. What would they be able to do, the United States? They didn't even help us repel the Argentine invaders when the Falklands were occupied, albeit briefly, by General Galtieri's mob. What would the Americans be able to do? They can hardly invoke the International Criminal Court. They're not even a member of it. If they were, they'd have had to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu last time he visited. He's visited Donald Trump, I think, more times than Father Christmas, but he would have been under facing threat of arrest. So I don't know what it is they would be able to bring to bear on that story. But it is an odd one. We'll find out a little bit more about it later in the programme. But we are talking about assisted dying legislation, or not, as it were, because it ain't going to happen now after, I think, a curious mixture of good faith concern about safeguards and perhaps rather bad faith obstructionism for, in some cases, very religious reasons. And as I've told you about 7 million times, religion for me becomes problematic when it involves some people telling other people how they have to live their lives, despite the fact that the people being told how they have to live their lives do not share the religious beliefs of the people telling them. Jackie's in Northampton. Jackie, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I'm a first-time caller, so I'm rather nervous.
Well, you're doing brilliantly already, Jackie, so I don't know what you're nervous about.
Thank you. My main thoughts about the assisted dying bill is it's personal choice. And by not voting it through, you're taking away personal choice. Now, people that disagree with it can disagree with it. That's their option.
Yes.
But they're taking away the people that do agree with it. They're taking away their choice.
They would say, or some people would say, that they're not doing that because some people would sort of have the choice made, whether they were making the choice themselves, in unsatisfactory circumstances. So, I mean, the point Tamara made about some people choosing this path because they're not getting the kind of support and love that Tamara's late husband obviously got gave me a little bit of pause. It's as if, because choice is a binary option, it's a yes or no, and the more I think about this, the less binary it actually becomes.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you mean, and I understand Tamara's point. But again, regardless of why you choose, choose to take that path, that's still your choice. And you're always going to get, there may be unscrupulous things that happen, but you're going to get that with or without the assisted dying bill anyway.
Yes, I suppose.
If somebody thinks, I want to end my grandmother's life because, for whatever reason, if they're that type of person, they're going to find a way whether we have an assisted dying bill or not.
Well, some will, some won't. I think that the threshold of the law is probably quite a big deterrent for some people who are sort of dreaming of matricide or patricide or whatever the grandparent equivalent of that is. I haven't got the Latin, Jackie. I ain't got the Latin.
Me neither.
What neither of us know is what would these people in the House of Lords say the kind of king of the loophole was, the king of the concern that prompted them to stymie the legislation. Because we can agree in first principles, everybody should have that choice. And people who are not really, really ill have that choice. People who are physically able have that choice every day of their lives. We all have that. We all have that choice. And these people are denied that choice by their medical condition in some ways. But what would they say? What would the Lord or Lady say if they had to leave all religious arguments at the door? What would they say the big reason why this shouldn't go ahead was?
Well, I don't know. Because they've put that many amendments in that they've obviously all got a lot of different views.
1,200 amendments.
Exactly, it's crazy.
It does feel a bit unlikely, doesn't it? That they're all in good faith.
Yes, it seems to me like a certain number of them have decided however they do it, they're not going to let this go through, and they've just done whatever they've done to stop it. But again, you know, it goes back to choice. I mean, I'll give you an example. My mother died a not very nice death. I mean, it's a long time ago now, so it's fine. It is what it is. But she was a regular churchgoer. So had we had the choice at the time when she was dying, she may not have chosen to take it. But that's my point. She would have had the choice. But because we don't have that here, she didn't have the choice.
Yeah. Yeah, choice is a big thing, isn't it?
It is a big thing.
I sometimes think it's the most valuable commodity of all for humans, because money, they say money can't buy you love or it can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you choices.
Yeah, it can. And the problem at the moment is if you want to go somewhere else, say Dignitas for argument's sake, you've got to have a fair amount of money in the bank to be able to do that. So again, it's discounting people that don't have that money. So therefore they don't have that choice.
Well, this is what I mean about it being not binary, not black and white, because that would apply to palliative care as well. So if you're getting really, really well looked after, you will have a better quality of life than someone who isn't, and that will inform your choice, that will influence your choice. I think we're probably nibbling at the edges of some of the concerns that people like Baroness Tanny Grey Thompson, as she was, well, and still is actually, but she's also now a Baroness, have. Not against the principle, but not convinced that the necessary safeguards are in place. Jackie, well, there you go. For other people listening who think, I might ring him one day, but I'm a bit too nervous, what would you say to them, having made such a brilliant debut?
Well, I would say this is my first time ringing in, so just go for it.
There we are, you see. Thank you. Lovely stuff, Jackie. 10:40 is the time. Roger is in Wembley. Roger, what would you like to say?
My wife was diagnosed in 2021 with a terminal brain tumour. And the surgeons asked us at the time, did we want to know how long she had?
Yeah.
And we said, no, we don't. And she said, I don't want to die to a timetable. Gosh. And so she just... But they said, well, we can do radio and chemo and steroids, which may slow it down. So we said we'd try that. And she just got, you know, the progression of the disease was really rapid. We didn't think it would be that quick. Yeah. I did some research and I thought the general consensus was 3 to 4 months was the maximum you could survive with that kind of tumour.
Wow.
Now, I should point out, she was a very bright, strong, independent woman. But she started to lose the use of her legs.
Yes.
By the time I had a chair lift fitted into the house, she was too ill to be able to use it. And she was just going downhill fast. The problem was, she was mentally totally aware of everything. She was a very bright woman. And we decided that she didn't want to die in a hospital or a hospice. Right. So I promised her I'd look out, I'd take care of her at home.
Oh.
So I was with her 24 hours a day. And watched her just diminish physically, but she never lost any mental capacity. And that was the worst thing about it. So even though she became bedbound, she asked me so many times, help me die. Mm-hmm. She was a tall, blonde, beautiful woman.
Oh, Roger.
And she's just, her hair fell out, obviously. She described herself one day. She said, I want a mirror. And I just said, you don't need a mirror. So I showed her a mirror. And she described herself as a football with eyes.
Oh, mate.
With the steroid treatment. Anyway, my son had just told us that we're having our first grandchild. She'd waited 40 years for us to have a grandchild. And she held on for 6 months and died 5 days before the baby arrived.
Oh, God.
We tried Dignitas. It wasn't the previous caller mentioned Dignitas.
Yes.
And it wasn't a financial thing. I'd have sold the house for another day with her. But just, it takes 3 months to do. I spoke to people who've gone through that process.
Right.
I'd looked into all that. Just, you know, she didn't have that much time left. And so I'm sitting there watching her, just in terrible pain. What? And yet, couldn't do anything.
Well, you did everything. Don't say that. You did everything. You surrounded her with love in her final days. Absolutely enveloped her with it, Roger.
I thought, James, I just couldn't help her. That was the worst thing. I was sitting there going, legally or otherwise, if I'd been away, I said, look, we may be able to find something. And she said, no, you'll end up in jail.
And she didn't want that for you.
No, so, and I understood the previous call I mentioned, the choice. I think it really needs to be a choice. And I think the Lords who are voting against it should spend 5 or 10 minutes with somebody in that condition and then sit there and go, no, no, we can't allow this. It could be abused. God knows, just trying to get help, I have to go with insurance company. We had a critical illness policy.
Yeah.
And I said, and that was exactly what it was for, the heart attacks or anything like that. And I spent 3 months arguing with them, saying, well, we need proof.
God.
What do you need? I said, I've got proof from her GP, yeah. from the cancer unit. I've got the Department of Work and Pensions all saying she is terminally ill and you're still not paying out on this policy. So it made it so hard. We struggled. And all the time, she's just getting worse and worse. And in a wheelchair, taking her to cancer units for radio and chemo that isn't going to work. And if she'd lost some mental capacity, it would have been easier.
But she really knew exactly what was going on.
Every
stage of decline. That's impossible. I mean, forgive me for getting my words. If my words are clumsy, but did it oscillate? I mean, did she have days when she begged you to help her die, but also days when she wouldn't have wanted you to, or did it become the permanent state of affairs?
It became the permanent. It was just we had nurses visiting the house to give her painkillers, shots, yeah. and so on. Sorry, I'm just going to get myself together.
Hey, don't be daft. And you take all the time you want. There's no need to get yourself together. I see. I lost at more or less the same time one of my closest friends in quite similar circumstances.
Well, we
didn't really have that desperation to go, but that's the whole point about choice. This isn't like a sentence, is it? It's not saying everybody in that condition will have to do it. It's simply saying some people will want to and some people won't. Tamara's husband, I don't think, would have wanted to, but your wife did.
Yeah, I mean, she never once said, poor me. She never felt sorry for herself, but she hated the fact that, she felt as though my life was being completely taken over. Which wasn't. I was happy for every second I spent with her.
Of course you were.
She didn't waver, have good days and bad days. And as I say, it was beyond doubt that she, that she had no future other than pain.
I mean, the people in the House of Lords, some of them are telling the truth when they say they are in favour of the legislation in principle, but they don't think there are enough safeguards. But you're right, hearing your story just makes that sound like a sort of luxury that they probably shouldn't be indulging. You don't have to if you don't want to, but tell me a bit about the grandchild.
She's fabulous. It would have made my wife so happy.
Yeah, but it makes you happy too.
Because we waited so long, Our kids, for whatever reason, we have 2 kids, but the grandchildren never came along. We were desperate to have grandkids, have them for the weekend, fill them full of E-numbers and send them home bouncing off the walls, teach them colourful language.
That's the tradition.
We never had that chance, and she never had that chance.
That's cruel, isn't it?
It's sad, but, I know the safeguards are so important, but there has to be an element to where the patient can make that choice. She knows how what it's doing to her. She was such an outgoing woman, social. Just she's one of these people. When you spent time with her, you came away feeling enriched by the experience.
I bet.
She was very special. Even on a coffin, she said, asked me to put a plaque on the bottom of her coffin. We promised 25 years earlier. Plaque on the bottom of her coffin that said, does my bum look big in this?
What a lovely thing.
We gave her the funeral she'd always wanted, which was the only thing. The last thing I was able to do for her.
I wish wouldn't beat yourself up like this. I hope it's not inappropriate for me. No, good, because you did everything. I know that you wish you could have done that other one thing, but what you did was extraordinary and exemplary and inspirational to listen to.
I just feel bad for the people who are going through this know how badly how badly they must need to give up the ones they love, just that escape, that final release, instead of just looking forward for months and months of pain.
I hear you. You're a good man, Roger, and a great husband, and I bet you're a brilliant granddad as well.
Try.
You take care. It's 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I think it does terminal damage to this image of the Prime Minister as a fastidious, careful, process-driven lawyer with an eye for detail. I think it does a serious amount of damage to the idea that while, yes, it's a very difficult job, this being Prime Minister business, that Starmer is actually a decent bloke. I don't think he is. I think he has knowingly attempted to bury someone to save his own skin.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4pm. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Notice the change in your hearing? We'll get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
You know, people ask me, what's my good place? It's in the garden, playing football with my girls. It's also knowing that because my pension is with PensionBee, I get a beekeeper, a UK-based account manager for support should I need it.
You're not very good, Daddy.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's draw, Euro Millions, from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 10:51, and I mean, if you didn't know it before, then you do now. Some of the stories that prompt other people's opinions with regard to assisted dying, some of the experiences that we, that they have gone through, make it look like a slam dunk subject. They do make it look like the simplest question in the world to answer. And yet, as everybody acknowledges, it isn't. But there must be a, there must be an answer to the question of why we have failed, why our legislature has failed to enact, legislation that other countries have managed to. Maybe other countries don't provide the model that people like Baroness Gray Thompson want to see. They don't actually have the loopholes in place. I mean, you know, there's no requirement even to be ill in some countries. Switzerland, for example, if you want to avail yourself of assisted dying. So it's easy to hear a case that makes you go, well, that's wrong. They should have been offered that choice. But, of course, legislation is about every possible case, not just about the ones that appear to be, well, incredibly, I think, in the cases that we've heard today, incredibly straightforward. Extraordinary amounts of love coming in for Roger now and for Tamara earlier. And I just add mine to the pile, if I may, because not only did you speak in ways that felt incredibly moving, you also reminded us of what a magical thing a wonderful marriage can be. Alison is in Falkirk. Alison, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I phoned you the last time that you spoke about this.
Yes.
And,
have you changed your mind?
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm kind of, it's, as you say, it's such a complicated thing. I still think that And Tamara said it, yes. A life worth living. So from the outside, what makes a life worth living? And most people are most afraid of not having capacity, of being felled by dementia or having severe learning disabilities. But in fact, I think we have to be really, really clear that every life matters. Every single life. The capacity, I'm so sad for Roger. You lost your friend. I lost my beloved sister to this, to the same illness. And she would have chosen to stay as long as she possibly could. She was surrounded by love. She stayed at home. She was surrounded by her children. By my sister went down and helped care for her as well, by her friends who are nurses.
I wouldn't dream of saying she shouldn't have been allowed to do that. So
no,
but you're close to saying that people who want to go the other way shouldn't be allowed to go.
I actually don't want to say that.
No, I know you don't, but that's where you are.
Yeah. It comes down to grandchildren again. So I have a grandchild who has profound and complex needs.
Right.
And he goes to a school with other children who also have profound and complex needs. He's not independently mobile. He never will be. He doesn't communicate in a conventional way. He never will. And he is the light of my life.
And you worry that this signals...
And I worry...
A slippery slope or the opening of a door.
I think it reinforces the views of people who don't know and are deeply uncomfortable with loss of capacity, with lack of capacity. It allows the conversation about what lives are worth living. Which ones?
But this is the absolute heart of the debate, and thank you for handling it so sensitively. Because... It's either a personal question or it's a societal issue.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily answer both questions in the same way. You sort of think that person should have had that freedom, but society should not accommodate. Oh.
So there's something that we certainly need to make sure that when it comes to end of life, you can receive the best treatment, the most choice that is possible, given how cruel and unfair it is for some of the things that happen to people. It's terribly unfair that Roger's wife was struck.
So if we had perfect palliative care in place, your position would change again. You'd think, I have perfect palliative care, but I still don't want to be here anymore.
In that case, that's I think Roger's wife should have had the choice, really. Yes. But I also think that the people who ran the clock down on this didn't behave honourably.
Some didn't. Some did. But it does seem unsatisfactory, doesn't it? You beautifully expressed some of the complexities here, because it's facts. It's head versus heart sometimes as well, isn't it? And you can't leave your personal experiences at the door.
No.
And your fears for your grandson are not addressed at all by the legislation as it stands, but you can't, doesn't mean you can turn off your concerns about where this road might lead.
I mean, people worry about dementia.
Yeah.
People worry, it's cognitive stuff all the time. We're so uncomfortable as a society in being comfortable with people who are different. I love the Assembly, by the way. If anybody hasn't watched it on ITV, watch it.
Yes, it is. I've got, and some people will be a little bit impatient with you for bringing these factors into a conversation about pretty clear legislation, certainly on the 6 month, the terminal illness diagnosis. But the lesson of other countries is that it doesn't necessarily stop there. So keeping the door shut that becomes an attractive option. Alison, thank you very much. Last word on this, I think, to Els, who's in Amsterdam. Els, what would you like to say?
Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi. What I wanted to say was. Here in Holland, our laws are so strict. It is really not that easy to get euthanasia.
Okay.
People always think everybody can go walk to the doctor and say, I want to get killed, and that's it.
Gosh.
Nothing like killing of children or whatever.
Oh,
it is a very, very strict procedure. And there are really more people who don't get euthanasia because they are too late.
Right.
Than people who will get it. We do have, of course, here palliative care. And my husband, he was in hospice with a brain tumor.
Yes.
And he was totally, not okay anymore mentally.
Sure.
And in the hospice, they took the freedom to kill him by palliative care. So that was a totally different subject, and I've talked about it with the foundation for the euthanasia here, the association. And they, I said, I was so terribly shocked because people are always arguing against euthanasia, which is just so strict.
The Dutch lesson then would be to show our lawmakers what loopholes and what strict regulations should be in place. Can I ask whether you've given any thought to your own circumstances?
Yes, my papers are at my GP for years already. My papers that I want euthanasia when I'm incurably ill or what is also very, very difficult here is to get euthanasia in case of dementia.
And, well, because when you're in the grip of dementia, you're not in a position to make an informed choice about what you want. I want it to be difficult. I'm going to run out of time, I'm afraid, Else. You've taken us a little bit beyond the news, but thank you. A very important contribution. And also, I should say that if any of the issues that we've been discussing affect you particularly, then the Samaritans is always open, 116123, or you can just search for them on the internet and get in touch via other ways as well. 116123 is the phone number. And that's why I think I'm going to end, if you allow me, where I began, by simply saying it looks like a binary question, for or against. But it really isn't, is it? It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the House of Lords have started their final debate on the bill to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales. No further time will be allocated beyond today, meaning it will run out of time to pass all of its parliamentary stages. Supporters say it's been blocked by peers, but opponents say it's unsafe. One of the bill's sponsors, the peer Lord Falconer, opened proceedings this morning.
We are not a democratically elected House, but we are rightly held to account for what we do here, or in this case, what we have not done. Members of the public who support assisted dying by a very large margin will be asking themselves why Parliament has failed to enact a measure that they believed would and should become law after Members of Parliament voted in favour of it.
It's reported the United States could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. A leaked Pentagon email suggests that Washington is drawing up ways to punish NATO allies for failing to support the war in Iran. The Trump administration and Downing Street are yet to comment. Donald Trump has said the King's state visit next week could absolutely mend relations with the UK damaged over the Iran war. King Charles is expected to hold a private meeting with Mr. Trump and also address Congress on his four-day trip beginning on Monday. Speaking to reporters, Mr. Trump also gave his reaction to Prince Harry calling on the US to honour its obligations in the Ukraine war.
How's he doing? How's his wife? Please give her my regards, okay? No, I don't know. I know one thing. Prince Harry is not speaking for the UK, that's for sure. I think I'm speaking for the UK more than Prince Harry. But I appreciate his advice very much. Great advice.
LBC has exclusively discovered that British nationals are being recruited online by hostile states to commit criminal acts in the UK. It follows warnings from police after a series of suspected attacks on Jewish premises in London in recent weeks. There's more on this story on the LBC app. And a US soldier has been charged after being accused of placing bets on the removal of the former Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro. Prosecutors allege Gannon Ken Van Dyke placed bets on the outcome of the operation to seize Maduro hours before it happened. Officials say Van Dyke won the equivalent of £300,000 as a result of betting. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 68 points at 10,388. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a fine and settled day for large parts of the UK. Feeling very warm for many, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market. One membership per year, participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, I don't. I presume you know what WTAF stands for, or WTF. I have half a dozen instances of those initials in my inbox in response to Donald Trump talking about his freedom to speak for England, or speak, isn't that the name? Is that the name of the Gareth Southgate play? Is it called Speak for? What's it called? Dear England. Sorry, we did something on the special relationship yesterday on the program, didn't we? And the fact that it doesn't exist anymore, but we haven't really done a Trump phone-in in the. We did. I mean, we went for a couple of weeks when we weren't really talking about anything else. And we're back in that space now where he's like a sort of, I don't know, what is he? He's like a seal honking in the corner of the room. But because he's the president of the United States of America, you have to report every honk as if it's headline news. What on earth would it even mean for the US to review Britain's claims, to the Falklands Islands? We did the one on Monday about him going mad as well, didn't we? Oh, that's all right, as you were. We haven't taken our foot off the Trump pedal. You'll be delighted to hear. Monday's thing, if you missed it, was really interesting because you had three people from completely different political perspectives all reaching for words like lost his mind, gone mad, sanity, questioning his sanity. One was Alan Rusbridger, who used to edit The Guardian. One was Matthew Paris, who used to be a Conservative MP and writes a column for The Times. And one was the wrongest man in the world, Daniel Hannan, proving the principle of the stopped clock being right twice a day. Daniel Hannan, not long ago, one of the former Brexiters, insisting that Donald Trump was going to be brilliant for Britain, now writing for an American newspaper about how the man has clearly gone mad. And then he has moments when he doesn't seem mad, he just seems nasty, venal and mean. Making comments there about the Duchess of Sussex that were clearly designed to amuse his crowd of misogyny fans, insulting the Duke of Sussex, insulting Prince Harry. Sadly, right-wing media in this country has created an environment where a foreign leader insulting a member of our royal family, a former war hero, will be acceptable. No one's going to be up in arms over at the Daily Mail because they're usually at the front of the line of people attacking the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. But the line about the Falklands, coming quite soon after an interview that Keir Starmer gave yesterday in which he insisted he would not be diverted or deflected from acting in what he says is the best national interest. 7 minutes after 11 is the time. We have been giving the Prime Minister a hard time on this programme of late, and I stand by every single syllable of criticism, and I think his position now is weaker than it has ever been, with the imminent local elections possibly providing the sort of coup de grace to this process of decline. We'll have to wait and see. But I think that the decision to stand against Trump on the Iranian question is one of the greatest acts of leadership I've ever witnessed from a UK Prime Minister. But I'm beginning to wonder whether you agree. I'm looking at two stories today. One is that Starmer insists he's acting in the national interest after Trump criticism. You can tell that he's got this absolutely right, because all of the people queuing up to insist that he got it absolutely wrong have gone absolutely silent, except the liars who are now pretending that they hadn't said things like in Nigel Farage's case, we should do absolutely everything we can to support Donald Trump. My Farage predictions are pretty grim, aren't they? Because they always come true. I told you that he would, as immigration figures began to plummet, he'd have to start attacking the unemployed or having to start attacking people on benefits. Front page of the Daily Mail today, Nigel Farage attacking people on benefits. As a percentage of GDP, by the way, the welfare bill in this country has hovered around the 10% mark for most of your life. So it is only when the people who have spent the last 10 years insisting that you should be furious about immigration decide to move on to something else that they start telling you to get furious about welfare or about benefits. As a percentage of GDP, the figure has been more or less steady for almost all of your life, but you wouldn't know that from the coverage. So Farage is going to do two things in the near future. I said to you, I think a couple of weeks ago, it's going to shift a bit, if not a lot, depending on the small boats and depending on the immigration figures, which are plummeting at the moment. He's going to start attacking people on benefits, and he's going to start pretending that he was never claiming to be best friends with Donald Trump. And he is now doing both of those things. I thought it would take a little bit longer, but, you know, here he is. Doing exactly what you can expect. And it's not hard to predict. Just ask yourself what a weasel would do, and then you'll get your answer of what is likely to happen next in this bizarre story arc of British politics. So I just want to talk about this standing up to Donald Trump, if you like, this refusing to do Donald Trump's bidding, using the Chilcot checklist at every turn when it comes to deciding whether or not British military bases should be used to allow defensive missions aimed at protecting residents of the region, or should be used as was originally requested. And this is obviously what has enraged Donald Trump, should be used for facilitating what is almost certainly an illegal adventure in the Middle East undertaken by Benjamin Netanyahu, who of course would be subject to arrest were he to visit this country, and Donald Trump. I want to know whether you think two things really. Does Keir Starmer deserve more credit for rejecting Donald Trump? 03456060973. We've talked a lot about the Mandelson mess and how he has handled elements of that quite appallingly. But the way in which he handled Donald Trump, I think, is pretty close to exemplary. And you can tell how cross Donald Trump is, because we learned today that the US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. I want to have a two-pronged discussion about this. I'd love you to give me a ring now and tell me what America could do with regard to the Falkland Islands, because I actually don't know. So if you are better informed than me, or you are better educated than me, have a better understanding of the issues, I've heard it in the news bulletin, but and I can read you the line, the US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands as punishment for its lack of support for the war on Iran. What does that mean? What would that mean? 03456060973. And given that it is so completely at odds with both our perception of ourselves as a nation, our perception of the so-called special relationship that we were discussing yesterday, and the carefully cultivated attempts to portray Keir Starmer as being weak or as being, what's the word that I'm looking for, as being ineffective, I wonder why he's not getting more credit for the determination and the resolution with which he has told Donald Trump to sling his hook. So there are two questions here. The first is, do you think that he should be getting more credit? And if your answer to that question is yes, then I want you to tell me why you think he isn't. And I mean from people. I don't mean from the ludicrously biased right-wing media. And moving from that to the reaction to Keir Starmer's resoluteness in this space, what on earth does it mean for the Pentagon to be compiling possible punishments for NATO allies after they refuse to join this ridiculous war, an entirely unprovoked war against Iran? What on earth does it mean to read or to learn to discover that the US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands? If you're military, tell me what do those words mean to you? I really want to know. I don't know what this means. The Falkland Islands, which most of us had never heard of until the Argentinians invaded, are populated entirely by British people. Parts of the Falkland Islands, I don't know if it's still like this, a little bit like going back in time, you know, like red phone boxes and things like that were the iconography that were broadcast to us when the Argentines invaded in 1982. But the... So for certain generations, these are absolutely huge words. The idea that the US could review Britain's claim to territory that is British and is populated entirely by British people, albeit that it's in the middle of the South Atlantic, Argentina's claim to it is no greater or more historic than ours, quite the opposite, in fact. What does that mean? What do those words mean? The US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. We're getting off quite lightly. They're talking about chucking Spain out of NATO. And the man's mad, isn't he? And this is what I find really... What's the word that I want? I don't know if the word exists, actually, because frustrating doesn't even touch the sides. What I find utterly disgusting is the way that they all facilitate him. So the Pentagon, you know, arguably the finest fighting machine in the history of humanity, is now sacking good people, as Simon Marks will talk to us about later, and populating the corridors of power with pusillanimous sycophants who are sitting there coming up with punishments for allies because they refuse to join an illegal war. How far and how fast the United States has fallen. Because this is what we were talking about yesterday. It's not going to be enough if they get somebody half decent back in the White House. The damage that has been done to everything is going to be generational. What are you doing in the Pentagon today? We're compiling a list of possible punishments for NATO allies who didn't support our war. It's pathetic. It's the politics of kindergarten. And yet it's real. An official told Reuters that the email said granting American forces access, basing and overnight flights, overflight rights from military bases was just the absolute baseline for NATO, displaying a complete ignorance of what NATO is, what NATO does and what NATO is legally supposed to oversee. It's genuinely breathtaking. This happens to me a lot. I think, oh, I can't do this again. We've got a Trump story coming around and I think, oh, I've had my fill now. I can't do this again. And then you dig into the detail of it and you find your fury or your disgust, your outrage being replenished and being refueled on an extraordinary level. They are looking at ways of punishing NATO allies for not joining a military escapade that is almost certainly illegal. That's where we are today. That's what they're doing in the actual Pentagon. A department that is run by a man who thought he was quoting the Bible when he read out Samuel L. Jackson's lines from Pulp Fiction. No wonder they've all gone silent. No wonder Farage is pretending he never said we should join the war. Badenoch's reverse ferret was visible from space. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail writing about old episodes of The Bill instead of writing about why he was absolutely adamant that we should have been joining this war and never been more ashamed to be British that we didn't join in. It's breathtaking to me where we are now. But that's not what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about Keir Starmer. I kind of want you to say nice things about the Prime Minister because I don't think he's getting the credit that he deserves for prioritising the national interest over either short-term political advantage or the cultivation of Donald Trump. He will not be, he said yesterday, diverted or deflected from acting in the best national interest, even as Donald Trump launched another attack on Keir Starmer, talking about drilling in the North Sea and changing course on immigration. Donald Trump displaying an ignorance of British domestic politics up there with his ignorance of what NATO exists to do. Immigration in this country is plummeting. It's going to cause us great economic harm the further it falls. And if you've learned anything from the current crisis in the Middle East, it's that the reliance upon fossil fuels is an absolutely disastrous way for a country to operate. If he doesn't, I don't think he had. How dare Donald Trump comment on our royal family, on our politics, and how dare he insult our Prime Minister? Where's your patriotic pride? St. George's Day yesterday, why aren't we all queuing up to attack the President for having the audacity to interfere? Farage used to be passionately opposed to American presidents interfering in British politics. No wonder he's gone silent on the subject. So, I have two questions for you. I want you to talk to me about Keir Starmer's decision to reject Donald Trump's demands that we join in his attacks on Iran. I think that this is not some, I don't think that he is getting the credit that he deserves for doing something that has clearly enraged the US president. And I want you to tell me, A, whether you agree in the first instance, and B, why you think he's not getting the credit he deserves for protecting the national interest from the hideous ambitions of the US president. But the other thing I really want you to help with is a simple explanation of what these words mean. The US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands as punishment for its lack of support for the war on Iran. What would that look like? What would that mean? Hit the numbers now, you will get through, OK? 0345 6060 973. It's 11:19.
This is LBC.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Canal Adventures in St. Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back. So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result! Love this shot of them driving the boat. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
house. My
weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
21 minutes after 11 is the time. I sometimes think when I ask you a question, you'd be perfectly entitled to shout back at your radio, you get paid to work this stuff out. Why are you asking us to do your job for you? But if I don't do it every single day, I think you can cut me some slack. What does it mean the US could review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands? And how do you respond to that news? I don't think there's ever been a more chest-thumping expression of patriotic fervour in this country than when Margaret Thatcher sent a task force to the South Atlantic to repel Argentinian invaders from... I was only 10 or 11 at the time, but it's burnt in my memory. The news bulletins seem to, in retrospect, contain nothing else. The images of the ships leaving Portsmouth. I mean, it was huge, absolutely huge. And yet we've now got a media and a politics full of Donald Trump fans who don't know what to do on a day like today when they discover that the Pentagon is compiling plans to punish NATO allies for not breaking international law and joining them in the unprovoked attack on Iran. And the punishment for Britain might include a review of Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. I don't know what that means. And neither do I know why Keir Starmer isn't getting more credit for prioritising the national interest over the whims and desires of the depraved president of the United States of America. And we're going to try and knit together a conversation that includes both of those elements. Mark can kick things off from Walsall. Mark, what do you reckon?
I think that Keir Starmer is not getting enough credit for how he's handling the Iran war.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not a fan of his. I didn't vote for him.
Well, that makes that makes your position more pertinent, doesn't it? In that you're being objective. You're not suffering from footballification. It's a really big deal for a UK prime minister to tell a US president to sling his hook.
I don't think he can do that because we're too ingrained with the US.
Oh, you mean completely cutting off? By sling his hook, I just meant in this context. I mean the state visit is going ahead. He has to keep lines of communication open. He has to tickle his toes when the opportunity presents itself. But the big question, will you go to war with us? He said no.
What Starmer's missing is an attack dog in his cabinet that says what we think, but isn't senior enough to be officially offensive.
That's an interesting point. Still too worried about. He almost needs a sort of rogue ally who can be really rude about Donald Trump without it coming back to haunt the actual administration, the actual prime minister.
Well, the Americans used to have one in Marjorie Taylor Greene, who used to say what the hard right used to actually think on behalf of Trump. But now Trump seems to have taken that role on himself.
Yeah, he's hemorrhaging the support of all the maddest people that were slavish in their speaking up for him during the first term and the first year of, indeed, the second term. Can we pin down why he's not getting the credit he deserves, Mark? Have you got a view on that?
I think there's certain sections of the media and there's certain sections of his own party that decided that he's a dead man walking and they want him out.
And therefore, it doesn't matter what he does. They're not going to give him the plaudits that he probably deserves. I'll be fascinated to see how this looks in history books, this moment. I did a A-level in comparative US-UK politics. So, the areas of interest have always intrigued me. And where it sits, Wilson didn't go to Vietnam. Trump this week saying that the Iran situation, which he said would be over in 6 weeks, could go on for years, drawing comparisons with Vietnam and Iraq. And that's more evidence of what we've talked about a million times, is that he just says completely contradictory things all the time so that he can claim vindication or validation whatever happens. If the opposite of what he said would happen happened, he can claim victory or validation because he also said the opposite of what he said would happen would happen. It's insane, this. It's so simple once you grasp it, but it never stops being bonkers. What I don't fully grasp is why Starmer isn't getting more credit for an extraordinarily bold diplomatic decision. The biggest question of his premiership, right? Certainly in international terms, arguably in domestic terms, in terms of the world, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, his role in the world, the biggest question he's been asked is whether he would join a war in Iran, and his answer was no. And we kind of gloss over it, and I want to know why. Rebecca's in Glasgow. Rebecca, what would you like to say?
Hi, I am boiling with rage over this.
Over what?
Trump.
Yes.
His attitude, his...
Well, you might be boiling with rage, Rebecca, but you sound like you've fallen down a well. I don't know if there's anything we can do to improve the quality of your phone line. Are we going to try, are we? We'll try and demuffle Rebecca and talk to Liam, who's in Worcester Park. Liam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for Keir Starmer generally over the last year, but particularly as to why he's not getting any credit, and he should be getting some credit for standing up to Trump over Iran and Greenland as well.
Yes.
Why isn't he? Well, I think. There's something about the collective headspace of the country seems to be obsessed with focusing on the big mistakes that have been made and the big problems that Keir Starmer has. It can't seem to handle the apparent contradiction of suddenly praising him for anything. That's what it feels like. It feels like it's like a motivated...
It is odd, isn't
groundswell
it?
...groundswell to get rid of him.
Yeah, I was puzzled by the visceral nature of the hatred until someone showed me some of what goes on social media now. I kind of taken most of my feet out of that fetid pool. So I wasn't aware some of the lies that are just out, some of the blatant lies that are out there, are conspiracy theories turbocharged. And so if you believe those, I can understand how you arrive in a position of profound and personal hatred. But I wonder whether we were, you know, almost sort of Brexit levels of betrayal by our media, because everybody was queuing up to say that Keir Starmer was wrong not to join Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu in this war. And even the, you know, the most bent and biased commentators would now have to privately or quietly concede that he was absolutely right to do it, but they can't come out and say so, because it would be to admit their own massive errors.
Definitely, yes. I mean, but also, going on to the thing about the Falklands War, obviously it's vindictive. You know, the whole idea of punishing someone for disagreeing with you or having a different opinion from you. This is very disturbing. But is it new? I don't know. But
it's brand new, yeah. It's brand new. Reuters got it yesterday, but I don't know what it means. I said to Eleanor when we were talking about it before the show, I don't think it matters. I don't know that the United States can do anything. I don't know what these words mean in the broader context. The US could review Britain's claim to the Falklands Islands. He's got an ally in Buenos Aires, hasn't he? The crazy guy with the chainsaw. Who in some areas isn't doing a bad job in Argentina, but what would that involve? Chucking out all the British people and replacing them with Argentina? I just don't know what it would mean for the US to review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. It's not a claim that is in America's gift. It's not their business in any meaningful or easily understandable way, any more than they could chuck Spain out of NATO. But of course, it's getting reported, and of course, I want to come to a better understanding of it. I don't know, how do we do this? Is it like we need a slide rule or a measure in the context of, or a penny whistle? We need, in the context of history and US-UK relations and British prime ministers, how big a deal is Keir Starmer's refusal to do Donald Trump's bidding? How big a moment is this in our domestic story? Not in terms of the transatlantic relationship, but that's why I say to you sometimes, I'm fascinated by what historians of the future will have to say about things, because it could be huge, this, and we are distracted, understandably, by the Mandelson debacle. We are skewed slightly by the hideousness of our media and much of the coverage, and by the viciousness of social media. We could be sitting at a moment of quite significant historical importance and not really noticing it enough, because we're too busy talking about, not parking tickets, but you take my point. And so how big a deal is Keir Starmer's refusal to do Donald Trump's bidding, and his enraging of the US president, morally, militarily, legally? The man is completely right, but he's leading a country full of commentators and opposition politicians who accused him of being completely wrong. It's 11:31. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The House of Lords have started their final debate on the bill to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales. No further time will be allocated beyond today, meaning it'll run out of time to pass all of its parliamentary stages. The United States is reportedly considering reviewing its support for Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. President Trump has repeatedly criticised NATO allies over their stance on the Iran war and is said to be considering various punishments. And retail sales grew in March, driven by a big rise in fuel sales. Figures from the Office for National Statistics estimate the amount of goods bought rose by 0.7% compared to February. LBC weather, a fine and settled afternoon for large parts of the UK, feeling warm for many, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that?
Yes, I have both Captain Hats for the boat ride.
Train back. So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wickes has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wickes.
When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop.
I can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
11:34 is the time. I was going to write a thriller once. Someone's probably done this. But I had an idea that there was... it's a bit Dan Brown, this. Well, I say I was going to write a thriller. You know what my late father used to say to me every time I told him I was writing a book? It's a Peter Cook joke, but he delivered it rather well. He used to say, neither am I, son, neither am I. And then, of course, by the time I wrote some books, the poor fella had passed away, so I never got to gloat in his face about actually delivering 3 best-selling manuscripts. But I had this idea that there was a sort of document. It'd be a bit like the National Treasure films with Nicolas Cage, or a Dan Brown novel, but politics rather than religion. And there was a document that would call... it would somehow undo the American War of Independence. It would prove that America never had the right to declare or something like that. And it was pathetic, and it was a ridiculous idea, and as soon as I spoke to historians about whether it was in any way plausible that such a document could exist, they were unanimous in their view that it couldn't. But I am kind of thinking, as Steve suggests in a text, that we could start reviewing the United States claim to Texas. We could invoke some, I don't know, some historic precedent. That's how pathetic Donald Trump is today when he says that the Pentagon is considering, or when we discover that the Pentagon is considering a review of Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. The problem that we have is that this is simultaneously ridiculous and important. That's Donald Trump. If you leave the depravity aside for a moment, and I appreciate that that's difficult, all that we are talking about is simultaneously ridiculous and important. He's going to steal Greenland. He's going to invade Greenland. Ridiculous. Important. Ridiculous, because of course the US president isn't going to claim that he's going to invade Greenland. Important, because the US president has claimed that he's going to invade Greenland. We're going to review Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. Ridiculous. It's nothing to do with you. But they kind of helped themselves to Venezuela the other day. So, you know, important. Can't be ignored. What would it mean? I do not know. Could we muster up a task force now to send to the South Atlantic like we did in 1982? It seems unlikely. But maybe we could trigger NATO Article 5 if the Argentinians were to invade again. Is Donald Trump saying to the chainsaw dude in Buenos Aires that if he were to launch a military campaign against the Falkland Islands, then America wouldn't do anything to help us? In which case, you just remind them that he didn't do anything to help us last time, really, to speak. So what does it mean? And why isn't Keir Starmer, given that this is yet more proof of just how enraged Donald Trump is by Keir Starmer's actions, why isn't Keir Starmer getting more credit for his actions in this country? Rebecca is in Glasgow on a better line. Rebecca, what would you like to say?
Have I climbed out the well?
That's perfect, yes. What have you got?
Great. I have a big issue with him threatening punishment on people who do not follow his lead.
Acquiesce.
The problem is that everybody has tiptoed around him all this time, so he's come to expect it. And when people put their foot down, he goes into this childlike way of, well, I'm not, you know, of looking to punish. But the problem we have here is that he is the most powerful man in the West. But he is driven by his admiration of authoritarian characters. And he sees Putin going into another country and claiming land that isn't his.
Yes.
And he wants to do the same. This is a land grab that he's on.
Well, you're taking it seriously. You think he's got his eye on the Falklands?
Yes.
Well, it's not much use to him.
No, it might not be. But then I actually think these are land grabs. He's colonizing. He would look at this, he would review this and say, no, you didn't have a claim. We'll take it under our wing. And we have to take Greenland seriously. We have to take Canada seriously because this man is not firing on all four cylinders. And the problem is that he is being backed up by people who are, if he were to be removed from post, they would then continue what he's doing and there's no 25th for them. So the allies need to get together and they need to stay on the same course. And they need to do it in strength because this man is just going to chip away, chip away, chip away at everyone. And we're going, I don't know what Project 25 says in detail, but there is something driving this man.
Well,
insanity.
It wasn't big on foreign policy. I haven't read the whole thing, but I don't think, I mean, certainly, you know, absolutely unquestioning support for Benjamin Netanyahu is intrinsic to the Trump administration, but I don't think there was much there about imperial ambition in Project 2025. You know, Rebecca, you mentioned Putin. I find it extraordinary that we don't talk about this more, about how the only thing you can say with absolute certainty regarding Donald Trump is that he will never do anything that particularly confounds, frustrates or upsets Vladimir Putin. So now he's weakening NATO. Memo put together in the Pentagon, talking about the expulsion of Spain from NATO, talking about the betrayal, if you like, of European allies, reassessing of diplomatic support for European, quotes, imperial possessions, end quotes. And Putin must love this. Looking at the European Union coming under attack from the President of the United States of America, looking at NATO coming under attack from the United States of America, looking at Ukraine, the leader of Ukraine being humiliated and insulted by the President of the United States of America, the list of things that, I mean, it's almost like a Christmas list. It's like Vladimir Putin's present list. He's delivered to Santa, and Donald Trump keeps just ticking him off, and we don't talk about it enough, do we?
No, and I think, you know, if you look at what Dugin's manifesto was, it was about claiming landmass outside of the kind of Soviet era lands. Now, basically what Trump is doing is all the hard work for Putin. He would claim all these lands. And because Trump is a Putin stooge, he could basically just turn around to Trump and say, right, hand it over.
I don't dismiss any claims about Donald Trump anymore because anything is possible. I don't know what people's favourite moment was as proof that anything was feasible for this madman, but probably Greenland, you know, the idea that he genuinely had designs upon sovereign European territory. So I'm not going to argue with Rebecca about the land grab angle. I don't agree with it personally, but I could be wrong. And 6 months down the line, it may be obvious that you were right. But in terms of what it would mean now, it's just bonkers that he's even saying it out loud. Absolutely bonkers. And yet, here we are, ridiculous and important at the same time. 11:42 is the time. Thank you, Rebecca. Matt is in Bishop Stortford. Matt, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Your previous discussions queued up this quite well, really. So I wanted to make a couple of points and then, you know, where might it go next?
Yes.
So one is, I think Starmer does deserve recognition for not getting involved in Iran. Yeah. I think Trump is deliberately doing all of this as a means of undermining NATO and the European Union.
Yes.
I completely agree.
And that, I mean, why aren't alarm bells going off all around the country? Why aren't our newspapers, our patriotic politicians, why aren't they absolutely outraged at attacks upon NATO, attacks upon European unity, European peace?
Attacks on Volodymyr Zelensky. It's one of those mornings where I suddenly remember all of the other things in the background that prove that he is just Putin's poodle.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and maybe it's that they're kind of beholden to him for kind of where they've ended up, you know, the likes of Farage and such like. But the other kind of thing I wanted to point out is that I think the Falklands issue is really a pawn in a bigger game. So I would encourage you and your listeners to go and listen to the Sky News podcast by Deborah Haynes called The War Game.
Yes.
Because that plays out essentially two scenarios. One is called the Grey Zone, and it's things like the Skripals being poisoned in Salisbury.
Yeah.
And the other is more of a hot scenario where Russia attacks the UK with conventional weapons and America is unwilling to help.
Yeah.
And it's like it's playing out like a documentary. You know.
Oh, George Robertson spoke to this yesterday when he talked about the need for us to cease our dependence on the United States of America and recalibrate our alliances. And that was the first hour of yesterday's show, which I would recommend people listen to in case they missed it. You can listen on catch up on the LBC app. I think this, I don't want to labour the point about historians of the future, but there's going to be books written, isn't there, about the.
Yeah.
And I mean, whether or not it's down to compromat or blackmail or something more venal even than that, or just greed or corruption, it can't be coincidence that every single thing Trump does looks as if it was dictated by,
exactly.
by Vladimir Putin.
And Brexit falls into that category. And I think if you ask why, then perhaps the reason is that what is the thing that constrains Trump and Putin? It's the European Union economically and legally, and it's NATO militarily.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? And so they are the checks and balances, if you like, the restraints. That's a great word. The restraints upon on imperial ambition or whatever you want to call it. The constraints upon them. You know, they're trying to dismantle them in real time as we speak. Thank you, Matt. Great stuff. 11:45 is the time. Benji Hire is up next. My LBC colleague, been doing a little bit of investigation into, I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let him tell you the story because it's surprisingly poignant and political at the same time. And we may, after that, return to the question of what the hell is going on here with regards to the Falklands Islands. Simon Marks will be with us at 12:30. And, he's in the news a bit this week because I believe his son just got married. But full disclosure is with the inimitable Michael Whitehall, one of life's great raconteurs, as he proves in the course of our conversation, a little snippet of which I will share with you shortly. The time now is 11:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I think it does terminal damage to this image of the Prime Minister as a fastidious, careful, process-driven lawyer with an eye for detail. I think it does a serious amount of damage to the idea that while, yes, it's a very difficult job, this being Prime Minister business, that Starmer is actually a decent bloke. I don't think he is. I think he has knowing attempted to bury someone to save his own skin.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades, and why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop.
I can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phew, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This week with Lidl's Garden Event, you can reserve your ceramic Kamado barbecue for just £249. Claim yours through the Lidl Plus app and collect it in-store next week. Now we're cooking. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lidl-plus-terms. Offer ends 26th of the 4th, 26.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
11:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Henry Reilly's regular feature, of course, has been curtailed for the duration of the purdah period that accompanies all elections in this country, with the locals just around the corner. But his, and indeed my colleague Benji Hire, joins us with news of, I suppose we could loosely describe it as a vetting failure, Benji.
Yes, James, good morning. We have spoken a lot, as you mentioned, about prospective councillors, candidates making, controversial remarks. But what I've been delving into is one specific individual standing for Reform UK in next month's local elections in Hastings. And this man, Ricky Hodges, has appeared not just to express racist or sexist content, which, you know, is so commonplace online, but has appeared to have gone as far as condoning, even encouraging, political violence. In a Facebook post and an account seemingly belonging to him, he called, and I should just warn listeners that this is some sensitive themes here, he called for the hanging of former Prime Minister Theresa May over her handling of Brexit. In comments that appear to be made by Mr. Hodges, he said the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, should be put in a coma, that he'd want to punch a squirming little lefty in the throat and take the limbs off Labour Party activists. He's also come under fire for purportedly making a series of unfounded claims on religion and gender. He's accused Muslims of being behind the majority of crime and alleged that women, quote, destroy everything. Those comments...
Women?
Women destroy everything.
Just women?
Just women in general,
okay.
He says.
And they destroy everything?
Well, he says that's why hurricanes are named after women.
Right.
I can't verify if hurricanes are named after men as well, but that was his allegation, unfounded. Those comments have caused significant offence, as you might imagine, notably to the daughter of Sir David Amos. And you'll recall that he is the Conservative MP, murdered 5 years ago whilst serving as a politician. And his daughter, Katie, is outraged that this candidate is being able to stand for office. She fears that his remarks could incite violence against elected officials.
It's deeply, deeply upsetting. These are abhorrent things to be saying. And this isn't a game. My father lost his life due to political violence. We should not be standing for this kind of rhetoric. He absolutely should be removed from the ballot without question. Put yourself in my shoes, for example. My father was killed because somebody thought those things. I don't think he would be thinking it was so funny or clever if it was his father that was killed.
I've also, sorry, James, I've also spoken, you know, with the MP for Hastings. This is the area where Ricky Hodges is standing. Labour's Helena Dollimore calls these posts horrific, and she is urging Reform's leader Nigel Farage to throw Ricky Hodges out of the party.
I think these posts are absolutely shocking. There are serious threats of physical violence contained within them, racism, misogyny. This is simply not the values of the people of Hastings. I wrote to Nigel Farage over a week ago asking him personally, would he drop this candidate and throw him out of the Reform Party? I'm yet to receive a response from Nigel Farage. I have tried to track him down in Parliament this week, but since Nigel Farage has not been voting for over a month in Parliament, that has been impossible.
And that is true. I've checked Nigel Farage's voting record, by the way.
You're a very busy man.
Campaigning up and down the country. Worth stressing...
Those cameos don't film themselves, Benji.
Indeed. We've obviously put these claims, these allegations to Reform UK. In a statement, the party told us an investigation is underway into these specific posts, and the case remains with the disciplinary team, which is thoroughly reviewing it. I also contacted Mr. Hodges. He told me he was not willing to comment at this time. You mentioned at the very top that, you know, this has opened up further questions raised again by Helena Donamore, the MP, about Reform selection process, because this is too late now to change the ballot or withdraw, Mr. Hodges. It's about the initial vetting, which Nigel Farage says has been tightened, but the Conservatives warn of a systemic failure in Reform's vetting. We've seen posts from a number of other candidates up and down the country, which include Islamophobic, anti-Semitic remarks, some being investigated in Swindon, the anti-extremist campaign group Hope Nor Hate exposing another one in Plymouth who claims Jews are creating division, fantasizing about impaling minorities. And again, I must stress, Reform tells us all those cases are under review and are being investigated. James, in the past few moments, the Labour Party has also released its banned political broadcast, which contains some quotes from Reform politicians. We're not going to be playing out on air, obviously. It contains offensive content. But they have reduced this dossier containing social media posts of dozens of those standing for Reform in May's elections, again, up and down the country with you know, racist, sexist, offensive remarks. And off the back of them, the Community Secretary Steve Reid saying Nigel Farage must sack all of these candidates named in the dossier. There is something worth pondering here more widely as well, which is the concern that's been raised by many campaigners off the back of this online activity, not just by Reform, by other parties, candidates of all parties, and how they pose a threat, a genuine threat to democracy, and how they dissuade, you know, kind, proper debate. The charity set up in the name of Joe Cox, the Labour MP, assassinated nearly a decade ago, is calling for a much kinder politics as we approach polling day on the 7th of May. And here is the organisation's CEO, Olivia Field.
We will be marking 10 years since Joe was murdered in June, so it's a real moment to reflect on where we are. And whilst there has been a lot of progress, we are seeing behaviours get worse. It's becoming less about a contest of ideas and more about an endurance test against kind of personal attacks and intimidation.
The Joe Cox Foundation tells me, by the way, that 96% of current MPs have experienced abuse over the last year in person and online. A reminder again, what Ricky Hodges said at the top, that he's calling for the hanging of politicians and that he wants to put the Mayor of London into a coma. I'm obliged as well, James, to list the candidates for the Trestle Ward in Hastings, where Ricky Hodges will be standing as a candidate. For Labour, Ingrid Christina Kathleen Allen. For the Greens, Glenn Haffenden. For Reform, as we mentioned, Ricky Hodges. And for the Conservatives, Shelley Lee. The election is on the 7th of May.
Thank you, Benji. Benji Hyer there for LBC, looking at the latest results of, in this case, Reform UK's vetting processes. I don't imagine that will be the last we hear of vetting processes, but as Benji suggested, there are problems being faced by all parties. 11:56 is the time. Speaking of problems, back to Donald Trump. Oh, just before you go, Benji, Hurricane Andrew? In 1990, there was a Hurricane Andrew. There was a Storm Dave recently. I don't know.
So are you suggesting that this man who made these allegations isn't telling the truth necessarily, James?
Suggesting he's no Michael Fish. Okay. It is 11:56. Jonathan's in Glasgow to steer us back to the conversation about Donald Trump, the Falkland Islands. Well, you tell me, Jonathan, why did you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James. So I'm a serving officer in the military, and we recently just came off a course where essentially we analysed the Strategic Defence Review, which was, you know, put out by the United States. And yes, one of the essay questions that we had to write was, does it pose a threat to the current sovereignty of the Falklands Isles?
Crikey.
It just so happens, you know, that was a bit of foresight from the course that this has come up. And essentially my conclusion was that it holds no strategic value to the United States, so, you know, it doesn't really matter to them. I think that this whole thing that they've said, you know, they're going to review their stance on it, has got us you know, talking about it. So therefore, he's trying to exert pressure on what he perceives to be a weak UK government.
Talking about it a bit, I guess. I mean, I don't know. This is what I meant when I said to Eleanor earlier, it's ridiculous and important at the same time. While you're here, Jonathan, a little bit of breaking news. Downing Street has hit back at the US amid these reports that it's considering the reassessment of its support for Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands, stating that sovereignty rests with us. In direct response to those claims, we could not be clearer about the UK's position on the Falklands, said the spokesman for the Prime Minister. It's long-standing, it's unchanged, sovereignty rests with the UK and self-determination is paramount. So there's no Greenland parallel, obviously. This is what you concluded in your essay, you know, proximity to minerals or to undrilled oil or anything like that. It's not a glittering prize in the way that Greenland would be. But I suppose it's leverage. I mean, it's not ideal for Keir Starmer to have, arguably our closest ally, essentially threatening to pull the rug from under arguably our most successful military engagement of the last 40 years.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that even in the US Strategic Defence Review of 25, it said that, you know, states have the absolute right to self-determination. And the fact that the Falkland Islands have voted recently that they wish to remain a part of the UK,
yes,
then,
of course,
you know,
they did.
Like, that they would just go completely against what the document they've already written. But then again, I suppose that wouldn't be a first for the Trump administration.
No, you're absolutely right. You almost get a Ray Liotta, but you didn't set the essay question. You merely answered it there, Jonathan. So not quite the scaling the dizzy heights necessary. After the news, we will hear from a succession of previous supporters of Donald Trump. Nigel Farage will be on. Dick Littlejohn will be joining us from the Daily Mail. Boris Johnson will be here. Kemi Badenoch's coming on, all to explain how disgusted and outraged they are that Donald Trump should not only threaten to reassess the United States' view of the Falkland Islands, but also, of course, malign the memories of the British servicemen and, I suppose, to an extent, the Argentine service personnel who died during that engagement back in 1982. 255 British troops died defending that territory. And after the news, Nigel Farage will share his thoughts on Donald Trump maligning their memory. Sarcasm emoji.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the House of Lords have started their final debate on the bill to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales. No further time will be allocated beyond today, meaning it'll run out of time to pass all of its parliamentary stages. Supporters say it's been blocked by a small group of peers, but opponents say in its current state it's unsafe. GP Dr Mark Pickering is from the group Care Not Killing and has told LBC he believes criticism levelled at the Lords is unfair.
When you look at recent polling that says what do people in this country want, a list of 20 different priorities, like defence and education and health, assisted dying comes about number 19. While there is a group of people very vociferous and very passionate about this, it's really in danger of being skewed. And actually the scrutiny from the House of Lords was incredible.
The United States is reportedly considering reviewing its support for Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. President Trump has criticised NATO allies over their stance on the Iran war and is set to be considering various punishments. Downing Street has just issued a statement insisting the Falklands sovereignty rests with the UK. LBC has exclusively discovered that British nationals are being recruited online by hostile states to commit criminal acts in the UK. Our team went undercover and made contact with an individual claiming to be acting on behalf of Iran's intelligence service. The LBC investigation follows warnings from police after a spate of targeted attacks on Jewish premises in London in recent weeks. Stephen Silverman is from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism is a major disruptor of society and societal norms. The people behind this know that. And by getting this to take root and getting people to act on it and spread fear and alarm, they are working to undermine our everyday lives. It's potentially lethal and it has to be stopped.
You can read more on this LBC exclusive story on the LBC app. Analysis of cancelled operations in England suggests 1 in 10 are called off at the last minute because patients aren't prepared for surgery. The study also suggests that around 4 in 10 late cancellations are potentially avoidable. And retail sales grew in March, driven by a big rise in fuel sales. Figures from the Office for National Statistics estimate the amount of goods bought rose by 0.7% compared to February. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 60 at £10,396. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a fine and settled afternoon for large parts of the UK, feeling warm for many, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the ribbon cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. One of the things I really enjoy about the time that we've spent together is stumbling into subjects that we haven't done before, which turn out to be utterly delightful. And we're going to do one of those again now. It's a relatively recent development on the programme, but it's rapidly moved into my all-time favourite conversations, well, among my all-time favourite conversations. And there is, I think, a personal dimension to it as well, because the more I read about some forms of neurodiversity, the more bells start ringing in my own brain, as some of you have been telling me for some time would indeed happen. But I know for a fact that I am not dyslexic, and it is dyslexia to which I will turn your attention first during this hour, because Donald Trump, I'm afraid, features in this this moment because he has been unspeakably rude about dyslexia and about dyslexics in the way that he is unspeakably rude about kind of everybody. In this case, attacking the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, by equating his dyslexia with being dumb. You may have heard on Nick Ferrari's show earlier that a new animated film voiced by Jeremy Irons and Liv Tyler is now being released to tackle negative attitudes towards dyslexia. It's made by the Made by Dyslexia charity. And it describes, defines dyslexia as a brilliant and different way of thinking. And it struck me, it may be that this conversation is confined to dyslexia, actually, but it may be that we move into the broader question of what I call late life diagnoses. Because I don't know how old you are, but in my mind, it's children who get diagnosed with dyslexia or with ADHD. And of course, that's increasingly not the case. It's more and more adults are discovering later in life that there is a reason why things that they thought were, I don't know quite what the word would be, to be honest with you, but things that I don't want to say normal. I don't think normal has much space in any of these conversations, but things that you thought were your fault. That's the way to describe it. Things that you thought were your fault and that other people felt were your choices or your failures were actually nothing to do with you and nothing to do with choices. Dads and mums taking children for ADHD assessments and recognizing that they themselves have it experience a real liberation, a real sense of growth. And we've had that conversation a few times, but we haven't had the dyslexia conversation. It comes up in Full Disclosure quite a lot. The one who really resonated for me as a guest, and there've been a few, was Brian Conley, who clearly lived throughout his childhood with a sort of dark cloud hanging over his head in that he thought he was stupid. And he had teachers that repeatedly told him that he was stupid. Whereas in fact, he had dyslexia. He has dyslexia. And it's a fascinating interview, actually, that. And we touch on this quite a lot. And it's really stayed with me. So some of those interviews really do stay with me. I've enjoyed all of them, every single one except one, but I'll never tell you who that was. I've enjoyed all of them. And by the way, the one that I didn't enjoy was with someone that I really like. It was probably my fault that the interview didn't go very well. But some of them really stay. Last week's with Marcus Brigstocke, I can tell from my Blue Sky account, you have been touched by that in ways that other interviews perhaps haven't touched you. And the one with Brian Connolly, similarly. But when people speak about... There's something about successful people discussing vulnerability that can be incredibly powerful when it's authentic and honest. It can be incredibly powerful. And because, you know, we live in a world where we probably worship the wrong things, and fame and success and celebrity probably get far too much attention and far too much importance attached to them. But when people who have all of those trappings of success display and describe their own vulnerabilities and their own battles, it serves a really helpful purpose for people who are not famous or high status, who are suffering from similar things. Think back to school now, depending on how old you are, and think back to the children that were earmarked as... Would we have called them... It depends how old you are. Would you have called them thick? Would you have called children thick when you were at school? Would teachers ever have called a child thick? That's going to depend on age. But you have an image, even if you weren't subjected to furious and constant assessment, academic assessment. You have an image in your... You can think back to the children who were bottom of the class, can't you? You just can. Now, think about them for a little moment longer and tell me whether or not any of them were really funny. Like witty, like really good jokers, or brilliant at other things, like art, for example. But the kids who were earmarked as bottom of the class, the likelihood for me, I'm 54 years old, so dyslexia was just coming in to common parlance or during my school days. And too late for some of my contemporaries, too late for some of my peers, because they'd already been sort of handed the mark of Cain. They'd already been earmarked as... I'm going to use the language that was used at the time. I don't think it's going to cause any offence. Thick. They were earmarked as thick. Thick kids. Stupid children. And they carried that. Not just that label, that stigma, but that sense. Dunces. Well, you think back to the Beano. What was the likelihood that the kid in the corner of the classroom with a dunce's cap on his head had dyslexia? Because if you struggle with reading and writing, then everything is a million times harder for you than it is for everybody else. But you didn't know. You didn't know. Some classrooms, Jane reminds me in a text, there'd even be a table. There'd be a table for the children who were bottom of the class, like the sick kids' table. How many of them do you reckon, looking back, probably had dyslexia? When we talk about naughtiness, we're probably talking about neurodiversity or ADD or ADHD. Think back to the children who were constantly getting into trouble, and I was one of them, and oscillating between being in trouble and feeling awful, feeling shame, and why am I in trouble again? I don't want to be in trouble. I don't want to be... I'm not like... And that... Probably, when you think back to those children, they were probably neurodiverse. They probably had ADHD. But when you think back to the children, I wish this language wasn't so cold. You think back to the children who were widely regarded as being thick, the chances are they were dyslexic. I'm trying to think of the other guests. If you've listened to the interviews, you can remind me, because it's not just Brian. There have been other guests on Full Disclosure who've talked about the determination to succeed in life, to propel themselves forward, to prove to people, including themselves, that they are not stupid. There's a slight danger in those stories, because it could so easily have gone the other way. If everybody keeps telling you you're stupid and you're never going to amount to anything, you might believe them. That's a heartbreaking prospect. You might actually have your wings clipped permanently by very early experiences of abuse. Actually, to be labelled in that way. There's two things here, isn't there? There's the perception of stupidity, but there's also the perception of laziness or choice. You are choosing to hand in bad homework. You are choosing not to work hard in class and therefore understand what's on the blackboard, whereas actually you can't. One of my favourite distinctions that runs through many of the conversations that we have is the difference between can't and won't. And one of the greatest tragedies of childhood is when people that can't are labelled as being people who won't. When children who can't do something are labelled as children who won't do something, as if they are deliberately choosing to be obstreperous or objectionable or naughty or, in this case, academically below par. Jamie's amazing, isn't he? Jamie was on the telly last night looking extremely cool, I felt, for a man of a similar age to me. But Jamie Oliver is another one whose dyslexia was absolutely baked into him, if you pardon the pun, at a very, very early age. He tells a story about the teacher, the special needs teacher, arriving in his classroom to take the special needs children away. Jamie's younger than me, actually, so the special needs was becoming a thing by then. And the other children in the class would sing the words special needs to the tune of Let It Be by the Beatles. And, you know, if he hadn't turned out to be brilliant at cooking, something that he discovered at a very early age in his parents' pub, and he's done extraordinary work. The reason I'm mentioning him is that he's done extraordinary work in the field of dyslexia because it's something that he feels so passionately about. It's the path not taken, isn't it? It's the path not taken. Two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less travelled by. If you'd got the diagnosis or if you knew that you weren't stupid, you were just in the can't category, not the won't category. Treating a child who can't do something as if they are a child who won't do something is a really horrible thing, isn't it? So, simple question, if you were wondering what the question was, what difference does it make when you discover that it was, you kind of knew yourself all along. Do you know yourself all along? Or do you think that you are somehow, this is where shame and guilt can kick in, isn't it? So, I know it's not just reading and writing, there are other things going on, but this is probably the most obvious way into it. You are sitting there watching other children do things with ease that you find really, really difficult. Do you start beating yourself up about not being bright enough or thinking that there's something wrong with you? Or that do you actually do the self-loathing thing where you think, I should be different, I should be like, and then later in life you realise that you had absolutely no choice whatsoever in those moments. There was no agency. There was no free will being exercised. You could not do it. And the teachers all treated you as if you would not do it. So I want to know what difference the diagnosis makes. That's all. And it doesn't have to have been late in life. I just want to know what difference the diagnosis makes. 03456060973 is the number you need. It's a wonderful looking film, this. And it addresses something, some damage, inevitably, that Donald Trump has done. He damages someone or something every time he opens his mouth. But he referred to Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, as being dumb. Newsom hit back, to every kid with a learning disability, don't let anyone, not even the president of the United States, bully you. Dyslexia isn't a weakness, it's your strength. And I'd like to open up that line of conversation as well, because I know that people like Jamie Oliver and Brian Conley and others that I've interviewed do think that their dyslexia has given them skills and strengths in other areas of their life that they wouldn't otherwise have had. So feel free to tell me that side of it as well. But in the first instance, I just want to know what the diagnosis delivers to you. How does the diagnosis change the way you feel, the way you look at yourself, and the way you fit into the world? Any teacher who calls a child thick should be disbarred, shouldn't they? really. But to curse children for things over which they have no control is a horrible thing to do, and it used to be absolutely commonplace. Phone lines are open, 0345 6060 973. What difference does the diagnosis of dyslexia make? What difference did it make to you?
LBC. Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop.
I can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's draw, EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
19 minutes after 12 is the time. A dyslexia charity moving or trying to undo some of the damage done by Donald Trump to children with a learning disability is how Gavin Newsom chooses to describe it, but he also describes it as a strength. His own dyslexia isn't a weakness. He believes it's a strength, and I buy that. But I think the diagnosis is crucial. I just want to know how important it was to you. Sarah is in Middlewich in Cheshire. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Hi there. Yeah, sorry, I'm a little bit nervous.
It's only me. It's only me.
So I got diagnosed when I was, I got my diagnosis when I was 11 years old.
Okay.
And that helped me amazingly. But unfortunately, my dad didn't get diagnosed at school. So in some ways I helped him when I got my diagnosis. I think it helped him to realise that he had dyslexia and he wasn't silly and, he wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
And I helped him the way I learned, and then he was learning more the way I was learning.
Really? You took home your sort of the dyslexia accommodations and your dad. Oh, that must have been quite a moment.
Yeah.
So what difference did it make to you? What was the difference between 10-year-old you and 12-year-old you that the diagnosis delivered?
They knew I had dyslexia all the way through school, so I'm severely dyslexic. So
what does that mean for people listening, Sarah? What does that mean?
So some people struggle a little bit with reading and writing. So my reading and writing age is of a 7-year-old, and I'm 34 now.
Gosh.
So mine's very severe. So it's like a spectrum. You can have it mild, you can have it severe, and I'm quite severe with my reading and writing.
The problem with this question, and forgive me if it's a stupid question, is that I only know what I can see. So I'm looking at a piece of paper in front of me now, and I know what I can see, but I don't know what you see. But because you don't know what I can see, can you draw the comparison? I mean, what do you see when you're looking at a book?
So it's just letters. For me, it's just letters, and they just don't make any sense. So I read it how it's... So if I'm spelling something, it's how it sounds.
Yeah.
For me. So I've got a 5-year-old at the minute, so I'm doing a lot of reading and writing with her. And at some point, I'm going to find that too hard to help her with that.
Well, she's going to overtake you soon, I suppose.
She is going to overtake me soon, yeah.
In terms of reading, that's scary. It is a bit scary. I mean,
I get a little bit emotional about it because I feel like I won't be able to help her at some point.
Oh, of course.
As a mother.
Oh, you'll find other ways of helping her.
You'll
be enormously important to her in lots and lots of different ways. So someone else can handle the reading and the writing side of things. What did they do to you emotionally to make you feel better about yourself when you got the diagnosis? The difference between the emotional treatment that you received and someone of your dad's generation?
So I got a lot of one-on-one in my classes. I got, so, like, you get really tired, so they'd give me extra time in my exams. I did get a lot of help compared to what my dad didn't finish school. So
it's really interesting that you can make that comparison within your own family. Final question. What would you describe, to use Gavin Newsom's words, what would you describe as the strengths that it has given you?
So I'm, like you were saying earlier, I'm very good at banter, very good with...
I'll be the judge of that, mate.
Well, I work at Bentley Motors, so I think that I'm very good at banter.
I'm sure you are, but that's what I use it as a synonym for quick wits, is what I mean, because you're quick-witted, but you're just not the reading and writing, which is
I'm very good with emotional, like with other people's emotions. I know if they're having struggling in their day, I feel like I pick up with that more as well.
Gosh. No, I love it. And that idea there, actually, I'm going to ask you a slightly, I don't know whether it's a weird question or not. I think I know the answer, but when your daughter started school, were you worried that she might be the third generation?
Yeah, I was very worried, and I made sure I looked at schools that had the help that she would need if she did have dyslexia.
And how quickly did you become confident that she didn't?
The first 6 months, because I spoke to my mum and she said she's coming on leaps and bounds compared to what I was.
Oh crikey, interesting, isn't it? What a lovely call, thank you. And I hadn't thought about that. I know that I mentioned that some dads going along with their children for an ADHD diagnosis realise themselves that they should probably get one as well, but I hadn't thought about a little girl coming home from school with a dyslexia diagnosis and everybody in the family realising that it applied to daddy as well. But in some ways, of course, in terms of the education, the formal education system, it was too late by then. Stuart is... Thank you, Sarah. Stuart's in Southend-on-Sea. Stuart, what would you like to say?
Hi there.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, hi. I was diagnosed with not just dyslexia, I can't say the word. That's a cruel joke of dyslexia. Try and spell it.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's a tricky word for everybody, isn't it?
But and also autism, funnily enough.
Okay.
So I'm neurodiverse as well. It was excruciating when I was in school, because obviously there was no sort of help back then. Way back, I'm 51.
Right, so similar age to me, and I don't remember in my early years at school, I don't remember even hearing the word.
No, see, or autism, I knew it was different, obviously, and basically I remember having cold sweats in English when they used to tell you to stand up and read in front of the class. And obviously my reading was terrible, you know, all the way through schools, you know. But then I got diagnosed with classic dyslexia.
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
I'm terrible with dates, ages, everything. Well, that's one thing that people don't realise with dyslexia. You can't organise dates.
Okay.
You're terrible with keeping appointments and stuff like that. But
these are classic examples of can't, not, won't, because if you're late or you miss an appointment, I'm going to jump to the conclusion that you're out of line, that you're out, that you don't care, ignorant and rude.
I've missed so many appointments, it's unreal.
Also,
directions are terrible. You know, the invention of sat nav is just godsend.
Just follow the instructions.
Exactly. So, the educational psychiatrist says that it's a trouble with having visualising things in your brain. So when you read over, you have to read it again and again and again for it to sink into your brain.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because you can't visualise it. So it is. But knowing what, going to your point, knowing what I've got, understanding your enemy, not to be too negative, is a case of I'm not thick. You know, I'm not stupid, because that's how you feel when you're younger.
That's
how you feel. And that's how you're sort of made to feel, not by people telling you that, but you see your peers getting on better than you. You sort of reach that ceiling where you can't learn anymore.
Gosh.
So, it is good to know, let's put it that way.
And how more understanding is the world around you now than it was when you were younger?
I was just saying to your colleague, it depends which arena you're in.
Hit and miss.
Yeah, I was in an office arena.
Right.
And they were not sympathetic at all.
Oh, no.
Even though they came across, you know, they had everything in place about supporting you with certain things, but it was utter tick boxing.
Yeah.
And the job that I'm in now is completely different.
They're looking after you properly.
Yeah.
It's funny, yeah. Isn't it? Nice one. I can't imagine what it's like to grow up thinking that you're daft or silly or stupid or thick and then realising that you're not. It must be a moment of extraordinary liberation, Stuart.
Oh, yeah. It does, like you said, funny enough, you punishing yourself.
Yeah.
It affects your self-esteem hugely.
Of course it does. And then when you realise that you had absolutely no role in this process, it frees you of some of that
absolutely.
Guilt and shame. Is it immediate, or do you have to work on it? Do you have to work on being kinder to yourself?
Well, yeah, you do all the time, regardless of everyone. You know, so many people have got self-esteem issues. I think that's a daily thing of not being too hard on yourself.
I think it's regardless. The nicest thing you can say to someone sometimes is be kind to yourself. Even people who are very good at being kind to others sometimes forget to be kind to themselves. It's really important. Stuart, I'm really glad to hear that. And I'm sorry about your experiences in your last job, but I'm really glad that your current employers and colleagues are better people, or nicer people, or better informed, more enlightened people. It's a mad one, isn't it? The way that society can change. And of course, you know, in jobs like this, there is a well-established tradition of expressing scepticism or cynicism about the existence of things that had not been identified when we were younger. I was one of those idiots that used to say, oh, I don't know what this is all about. We just used to call it naughty in my day when talking about opposition defiance disorder or ADHD, and you can still find columnists advertising their ignorance in 40-foot-high letters on these kind of subjects. But that's why I love the question that we're asking today, the difference that diagnosis makes, because it's just human, isn't it? That's the difference that it makes. It makes a difference to humans, a profound and meaningful difference. It's coming up to 12:30. After the news bulletin, Simon Marks will join us live from Washington, D.C. It's one of those mornings where we had him booked before the show started, but there's now more things for him to talk about than there were when we booked him before the show started. So find out what we are going to talk about after the very latest headlines with Matt Hewitt.
The sponsor of the assisted dying bill in the House of Lords, Lord Falconer, says he's despondent that the proposed legislation for England and Wales will run out of time today. But the Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, says it should not be brought back in the next parliamentary session, as we should be talking about how to improve people's lives, not how to end people's lives. Donald Trump's administration could review its position on the UK's claim to the Falkland Islands in retaliation for what it sees as Sir Starmer's lack of support for the war in Iran. The internal Pentagon memo suggests reassessing US diplomatic support for what it called imperial possessions, such as the island group in the South Atlantic. And a man's due in court charged with murdering a cyclist in Greater Manchester. 56-year-old Michael Mullins died in a collision with a car in Altrincham on Monday. LBC weather, a warm, fine and settled day for most of the UK. Highs of 11 to 21 degrees.
LBC.
Need anything from Tesco? Like 3 for £8 on selected Tesco finest picnic food, such as burrata with semi-dried tomatoes or whipped feta and tabbouleh.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 11th of October. Club card or app required.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. It's Wayday, our biggest sale of the year. Get it out of your head and into your home for less. Shop the sale on the Wayfair app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honeypot Bears, and four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
100.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 12:33. I always, that story Stuart told about the dread, the cold dread he'd feel when they were going around the class doing plays. I was the polar opposite of that. You won't be surprised to learn. And it's so interesting to see the world through other people's eyes and recognise that the world could not have been more different. You could be sitting next to someone who was in terror at the thought of being asked to read in class, whereas I was always slightly miffed when I wasn't reading out loud. Showing off, I suppose, in class. To Washington, D.C., where Simon Marks awaits. And as is sometimes the case, Simon, there is more to talk about at 12:33 than there was when we asked you to come on the programme shortly after 10 o'clock this morning. We should probably begin with the Falkland Islands.
Yes, absolutely, James. And I think we should probably begin with the fact that you and I have both missed a major chance here. Because if 24 hours ago we had placed a bet on Polymarket or Kalshi to say that we'd be talking today about the Falkland Islands, we would be quids in, a bit like the soldier here who was suddenly accused last night of placing bets on one of those two platforms over the military operation in Venezuela and trousering $400,000, who's now been arrested. Look, it is extraordinary that as we wait for the King and the Queen to arrive here in Washington next week, we are now talking about the Falkland Islands because of this leaked Pentagon document that suggests that in a whole raft of reprisals that the United States and the Trump administration is thinking of taking towards NATO members, one of them is to renounce the notion that the UK has any sovereign right to the Falkland Islands, which of course would be a massive gift to Donald Trump's mucker in Buenos Aires, Javier Milei, and would also very neatly from Donald Trump's perspective, further punish Keir Starmer, something that he can't stop talking about here, even as we prepare for the state visit by the King and Queen that is supposed to be marking the beginning of America's 250th birthday commemorations. So this plan, apparently, potentially, to pull support for British sovereignty towards the Falklands, at least to question it, one measure that's included in that document that has been leaked from the Pentagon. One has to wonder about the timing of this leak. But it also demonstrates, much more importantly and much more broadly, that the Trump administration and the president is absolutely still thinking about pulling out of NATO because he's so furious, he says, over NATO failing the test that he set for the alliance in Iran. And so earlier this month, he was asked by the news agency Reuters whether he was still thinking about pulling out of NATO. And he said, well, wouldn't you be thinking about it if you were in my shoes? And it's absolutely evident that both he, Secretary of State Marco Rubio now, Vice President J.D. Vance, are aligned, and obviously the Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, presiding over this document at the Pentagon, absolutely aligned in terms of threatening to pull the rug out completely from under the transatlantic alliance that has kept the peace in Europe for 8 decades.
I mean, it is mind-boggling, isn't it? I know we do this often. We get used to it for a while, talk about it for a while, normalise it for a while, and then a sort of metaphorical bomb goes off, and you recognise just how absolutely insane almost everything has become. Hard even to think of a rationale. I mean, questions I would have asked you 12 months ago before all of this became commonplace. Are people like Rubio on board with this genuinely in their bones, or are they just acting opportunistically and doing whatever the president wants? What rationale could there be for this? Is Vladimir Putin yanking Trump's lead? I mean, the only person who would celebrate the collapse of NATO, or indeed the removal of the United Kingdom from the European Union on the international stage, would be our enemies. And yet the United States is still supposed to be our ally. But we don't know the answer to any of these questions, do we? Really?
Well, I do think it's important to put into its historical context the Falklands and the United States, yes, and its relationship with the UK, because you and I were both young lads when that war took place, and remember that at the time President Ronald Reagan was very dubious about Margaret Thatcher's decision to send the fleet to the South Atlantic, and indeed was urging her on numerous occasions to strike a deal. A phrase that, of course, has even more resonance now than it did back in 1982 with the Argentinian government. And she absolutely pushed back and said, no, we've got to draw a line, if not in the sand, in the water, certainly a line on the soil of the Falkland Islands, and make it absolutely clear that the aggression of the Argentinians was not going to stand. So America has always been, dating back to 1982, wobbly on the Falklands. What the Trump administration would say is their national security strategy decrees that the Western Hemisphere is their unique sphere of influence. They've demonstrated through the attack on Venezuela and through various other things they've been up to, including the conversations they're having with the government of Cuba, that they intend to be the dominant power in America's own Latin American backyard. And Donald Trump is furious, obviously, with the Prime Minister. Not only furious with the Prime Minister, wants to undermine the Prime Minister at every turn in order to grease the wheels of Nigel Farage and Reform UK in an effort to get his man into number 10 Downing Street. And so this is all redolent of the fact that
Vladimir Putin fan. I don't think we should stop mentioning that. It's out there in place.
No, well, speaking of Vladimir Putin, I mean, the other thing we learnt last night, which is going to be a massive challenge for number 10, is that the President of the United States intends to invite Vladimir Putin to attend the G20 summit that is going to be held on the outskirts of Miami at Donald Trump's own golf club, just to underscore the nature of the event, in October. And that is going to be a massive problem for number 10, for the Elysee Palace, for leaders throughout the G20, who will now have to decide two things. One, are they willing to attend a G20 that's going to be held at Donald Trump's personal property? The White House says he's going to make no money out of it, but precisely what that looks like has not been, of course, divulged. But number two, are they going to show up at an event where Vladimir Putin, a wanted war criminal, is going to be welcomed quite literally into the bosom of the Trump business empire? So that is another question that is hanging over the royal visit, the relationship with number 10, and again, the fact that it was revealed last night, that invitation by the State Department is apparently about to go out to the Kremlin, seems not to be entirely coincidental.
Pretty much every other country around that table would arrest Vladimir Putin if he set foot on their soil.
What would be required to arrest him, because of their support for the tribunal. The United States, of course, as we've already seen through Vladimir Putin setting foot on Alaskan soil, the first time the Russian leader had been welcomed to set foot on American soil in over a decade, as we've seen through that first summit and now this apparent invitation that's going to him to attend the G20, this administration has absolutely no compunction about allowing him to set foot on American soil, because they have, of course, argue they're not bound by the arrest warrant.
Same with Netanyahu, actually, while we're discussing such matters. Well, thank goodness then, despite all of this, that Donald Trump hasn't been rude about any of the king's children, given the imminence of the state visit.
Yeah, well, why don't we have a listen to what Donald Trump had to say yesterday about the upcoming state visit. And listen to all of this, because it is so revealing on multiple levels. It all started with a question to the president yesterday about Prince Harry.
Prince Harry today has said that he would like to see you do more to end the war in Ukraine. Do you think it's appropriate for a royal to make those comments ahead of the visit on Monday?
Prince Harry?
Yes, sir.
How's he doing?
Well, he's in
How's
Ukraine?
His wife? Please give her my regards, okay? No, I don't know. I know one thing. Prince Harry is not speaking for the UK. That's for sure. I think I'm speaking for the UK more than Prince Harry, but I appreciate his advice very much.
Would you have great advice to the dinner and to the state visit?
Well, I look forward to the dinner. We're having King Charles come. He's a friend of mine. We're really looking forward to it. We've spoken, and we're going to have a great time. I tell you, if I had that ballroom built, it would be filled. I wish we had more seats. We're going to have very great people that love the UK. I love the UK. I think they made a big mistake on energy. You should open up the North Sea in Aberdeen. You should open it up. And the other thing is they've made a big mistake on immigration.
Now, there's an awful lot in that, starting with the sarcasm that the president offers when he's asked about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. He has disdain for both of them. That's on the public record going back a long while. Then getting to a point where he actually says, I'm speaking for the UK, which, of course, is a ludicrous position for any president of the United States to take when referring to any other government. But then we get absolute clarity about the eggshells upon which the King and the Queen will be walking next week when they are here in Washington, D.C. I mean, he goes off on the riff about the ballroom, and we cut that down a bit because it's a long riff about the ballroom, but he immediately goes to the ballroom, and it's a great shame he hasn't got more seats for the dinner that's going to be taking place next week. But then manages to take himself immediately to hitting out at the Prime Minister and once again raising the issue that he believes the Prime Minister has made a major mistake by failing to authorise more drilling in the North Sea off the coast of Aberdeenshire for oil and, of course, by not supporting him on Iran. So how all of this is going to be choreographed next week, when the King and the Queen are with him and when they are not with him and he has access to reporters, including now propagandists in that White House briefing room who are going to ask questions about the president's view of the UK, even while the King and Queen are here. Is he going to adopt normal convention and basically zip it and basically button it until they've gone? Or even, and then after that, of course, it'll be open season again, but even while they're here, there's a tremendous risk that it's going to be open season again.
Do you think he can? Do you actually, I mean, you watch him more closely than most people do. He's not capable of doing what you've just described, is he?
Not capable. Not capable of being in a position where he stops transmitting. This is a man who is transmitting 24/7, whether it's verbally, in person with reporters, on his social media feed, even this week, texting reporters, because he actually thinks transmitting is governing.
Right.
And he doesn't understand that governing is stuff that you do when you're off camera, when you're not in front of reporters, when you're not constantly messaging. He thinks he conflates the two. They're both the same.
John Phelan, finally. Who's he and what's happened?
Well, he was the US Secretary of the Navy, and he was suddenly defenestrated by Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, a couple of nights ago, to everyone's great surprise. We all thought they must have had a row over the stewardship of the Iran war and the conduct of the United States. It was interesting, by the way, to hear President Trump yesterday insist that he won't use nuclear weapons on Iran. At least that was put on the record yesterday. We now know that the reasons for John Phelan's departure relate directly to presidential anger over the fact that the Navy Secretary was deemed to be dragging his feet over the commissioning of $17 billion worth of new battleships that, and I am not making this up, the president wants to name after himself.
Wow.
Trump-class battleships that are going to be equipped with rail guns and laser-guided weapons systems that the Pentagon itself concedes have not so far performed flawlessly in testing. So big questions about a lot of the technology that's supposed to be going to be included in these fast, custom-designed battleships that President Trump has shown us the designs of in various White House events over the last few months. Phelan was accused by the president of dragging his feet and so basically was fired by the president in person at the White House on Wednesday and then replaced by his deputy. A man who, and I am again not making this up, has previously articulated the viewpoint that parts of California are being taken over by witches. And he, I mean, yes, he has said that. It is on the record. He's made a whole host of other intemperate remarks on various issues. But he actually has argued that the Wicca community is taking over parts of California.
Actual witches. As it's like sort of hubble bubble toil and trouble territory.
Yeah.
He's also said...
Well, members of the Wicca community. I think we should be careful, because, in his telling, that's the way that he views members of
Community. No, an important clarification. I don't know if you can clarify this. He's also said that the military should be recruiting alpha males and alpha females who are going to rip out their own guts, eat them and ask for seconds.
Mm. Yeah, but a bit of a dispute there between him and the Defence Secretary, Pete Hegseth, because, of course, the Secretary of War isn't very interested in recruiting alpha females. He wants...
No females.
He's very into the maleness of the army.
I need to tell you, I have a listener who I'm very fond of, called Robert, who's getting very, very cross with us both for saying Secretary of War, because he quite rightly points out that Trump has not got the authority to change department names. How many times do I have to remind you? So I just wanted... to let Robert know that I have registered and heard his anger and his fury, and to point out, Simon, that when you deploy that phrase, you're doing so in a slightly ironic fashion.
Well, yes, I often say the self-styled
exactly
Secretary
that.
Of War.
Yes.
Robert is absolutely right. It is still the Department of Defense, even though there are various places in the building where it says the Department of War, and he is still officially the Secretary of Defense, but... At a time when the president calls him the Secretary of War, and he calls himself the Secretary of War, I do think if we carried on calling him the Secretary of Defense, we would also be slightly misleading listeners. So it's a complicated one.
Indeed it is, but as ever, you navigate it perfectly. Simon, have a lovely weekend. Simon Marks there, our Washington editor, providing a characteristically perfect analysis of the latest madnesses to unfold in the United States of America. It's just coming up to 10 to 1.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Falklands War burns survivor Simon Weston on reports Donald Trump plans to favour Argentina's claims on the islands. Not wild about Harry at the moment, are you? And the Jacko film, yes or no?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop.
I can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Forget that. You just have to
keep dancing. Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear by
advice, 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 advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom, Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:52 is the time. If you have detected over the years that we've spent together that I occasionally do a little bit of mirroring when I'm talking to people, most obviously I think when I'm talking to Irish callers, and I found myself saying grand in a way that Irish people do, but in a way that I never do unless I'm talking to Irish people. You may have noticed that it also happens with people who are very well-spoken. I think you can take the boy out of public school, but you can't always take the public school out of the boy. Bizarrely, Michael Whitehall went to the same public school that I did. So if you do settle down to enjoy this week's Full Disclosure interview, in which Michael is the esteemed guest, you could be forgiven for thinking that you'd stumbled into an old episode of Jeeves and Wooster. But this, speaking of class, and we were both at a school where our backgrounds were considerably more ordinary than an awful lot of the people that we were at school with. But I think I'd done a decent job of asking him questions that he, and he did a beautiful job of answering them, that will make some of these experiences, although quite personal, I hope they have a wider resonance, because nothing is more intrinsic to the English experience than class, is it? As this rather long clip, I think, amply demonstrates.
Well, Rothwell was one of my best friends, and he was a very sweet boy, but much posher than me. His parents lived in a manor house, Moorbath Manor in Devon, and he asked me to come in the holidays and spend a few days with him, with his parents, and I said, that'd be lovely. Oh, my mother, of course, then went into complete panic, you know. Oh, my God, what do we... Oh, you must find out. I mean, will they be dressing for dinner? And I said...
Because it's her dream and her nightmare at the same time, isn't it? Yes, of course.
Exactly. And I said, I don't know, Mother. But, I mean, they live in a manor house, don't they? And I said, well, yes, they do. And she said, oh, God, I don't think I've got anything you can wear either. We better go into town and get some... You know, there's so much panic about this this period. Anyway, I'm finally off to Rothwell's. The first thing to do is to have breakfast. So I come down to the dining room of the manor, and I got down into the dining room ahead of everyone else, and I thought, well, there's no food here. I'll just have a cup of tea. So I had a cup of tea and a piece of toast or something. At which point the doors flung open and in came Major Rothwell. Morning, old boy, how are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm doing fine, yes, thank you very much. No, they're really lovely to be here, and you have a lovely house. And he said, well, yes, oh, we've been here, you know, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. So, not eating anything, toast and marmalade. And I said, yes, I'm absolutely fine. Oh, because it's all over here. And he walked over to this side table where these silver dishes were, which I thought were sort of ornaments. And he lifted them up, and one had egg in it and the other bacon. And he started putting all this food in his plate. And he said, are you sure you won't change your mind, old boy? And, of course, I was committed now. I'd had the toast and marmalade. I couldn't go back there. I felt stupid, and I thought I must remember.
And hungry.
And stupid and hungry. Then the return visit occurred, and Rothwell came to stay with us in Beckenham. And again, I mean, Nora was even more of a state, you know, because you would have thought that Rothwell was going to be coming with, you know,
a retinue.
Yes, a retinue of people. Anyway, so Rothwell arrives, and anyway, Jack comes down and sees this table with these silver dishes, and he looks at Nora and says, Nora, why have you put bacon in your jewellery box? And she said, what do you mean? That thing is what you normally put all your jewellery and your necklaces and everything in. Oh, Jack, don't be ridiculous. Well, it's got bacon in it. What about in here? No, and she got fried eggs in there. and saying, Rothwell, will you have a fried egg? Or I could give you a poached one if you would prefer.
And you could tell how much I was enjoying that interview, and there's a whole hour of it for you this weekend. You meet a lot of people when you do what I do for a living, and remember that before I even got my foot through the door at LBC, I was a show business journalist, allegedly. So I've met a load of people, a load of famous people over the years. I'm not sure I've ever met anybody nicer than Michael Whitehall and his wife Hillary, and it's no accident that their son Jack, named as you discovered in that clip for his paternal grandfather. It's no accident that their son Jack is such a lovely bloke as well. Special prize to anybody who can name the other father-son combinations who have both graced Full Disclosure, because of course Jack Whitehall has already been on it, and now this weekend his dad Michael will be, well, it's already been released, you can listen to that one as well. Have you got any? Can you have a go?
I'm going to have a go.
Go on, then.
Is it Joe Pasquale and his son?
Whoa, well played. Well played.
Am I right?
Yeah, Joe Pasquale and Joe Shassini. Is there one other? Did I do Roman Camp? I don't know. I've definitely done Martin. But anyway, yes, Joe Pasquale and Joe Chassini, both absolutely lovely people. And I think Joe Chassini's on tour at the moment as well, so do, if there are any tickets available, which is frankly unlikely, you will not regret seeing him on stage. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I don't think there's anything funnier than Joe Trassini's gymnastics commentary.
Just sensational.
It's just probably
triple wagon wheel.
Your father looks like a moron.
Oh, yes.
I made that bit up, but as part of it, it's like your father looks like something. It's just so good.
Sensational.
Thank you, James. Have a great weekend. At 3 today, I want to talk about this Michael Jackson biopic. Would you, will you go and see it? It's being described as a whitewash of the performer's life. Has Prince Harry picked the worst time to publicly comment on US leadership whilst he was visiting Ukraine? He's got a right to go wherever he likes to go, I suppose, and say whatever he likes to say. But still, it's not just about his dad, is it? It's about the vital UK-US relationship. I think it's a bit of a boo-boo myself. In the start, though, this suggestion that Donald Trump might want to remove approval of British protection of the Falklands Islands. Burn survivor from that war, the Falklands War, Simon Weston joins me in a moment.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, there's disagreement over the bill aiming to legalise assisted dying as it runs out of time in Parliament to become law in England and Wales. The bill's sponsor in the House of Lords, Lord Falconer, has blamed a small minority of peers for delaying it with hundreds of amendments.
We are not a democratically elected House, but we are rightly held to account for what we do here, or in this case, what we have not done.
Some of the amendments were made by the Paralympian, Baroness Grey Thompson, who's been speaking in the last few minutes.
My Lords, this bill has failed because there are too many gaps in it. And the Delegated Powers Committee, Royal Colleges, organisations for disabled people, charities, have all raised multiple concerns about this bill, not the principle.
Downing Street says the government's position on the Falklands could not be clearer, saying sovereignty rests with the UK. It follows reports the US is considering reviewing its support for Britain's claim to the islands off the coast of Argentina. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has dismissed the suggestion.
I think this is absolute nonsense. This is one of the things that worries me about the changing world. I'm not like Keir Starmer giving away the Chagos Islands and surrendering British territory. We need to make sure that we back the Falklands. They are British territory. I don't know what Donald Trump is talking about.
Argentina says the islands have been illegally occupied for nearly 200 years. A man's been charged with murdering a headteacher as he rode his bike in Greater Manchester. 34-year-old Simon Richardson's also accused of dangerous driving in Altrincham on Monday. A second round of talks between Iran and the US is expected in Pakistan. A Pakistani government source claims the Iranian foreign minister is expected to arrive in Islamabad tonight with a small team. The source claims a US negotiation team is already in the country. Analysis of cancelled operations in England suggest 1 in 10 are called off at the last minute because patients haven't been prepared for surgery. Experts say improving wraparound care must be a priority for the NHS, or waiting lists could stay unacceptably high. And the owner of Instagram and WhatsApp is making 8,000 job cuts. Meta says it's laying off about 10% of its workforce so it can increase spending on AI. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 26 points at 10.430. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a warm, fine and settled day for most. Cloudy in the Northern Isles, highs of 11 to 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. I am surprised in a way to find myself wanting to talk to you about the Falkland Islands today. I didn't see that coming. Downing Street has said the sovereignty of the Falkland Islands rests with the UK. That's their term, rests with the UK. This follows a report that the US might review its position on the British claim to the territory. It's an internal Pentagon email suggested that the US was considering options to punish various NATO allies that it believes failed to support its war on Iran. It has, for example, talked about removing Spain from NATO altogether, only to be told there is no such function to do that. But to the Falklands, I was a teenager, 15, 16, when the Falklands happened. And I went to Buenos Aires on the 30th anniversary of the war and spoke to both people who'd fought in it for Argentina and for Britain. Such fascinating conversations with the men and women involved. You'll hear in a moment from Simon Weston, a name familiar to many, many people who remember that war and the sacrifices that people made in it. Simon's a former Welsh Guardsman who fought in the war and was very severely burned as he was taking part in it, but thankfully survived. Let's just take ourselves back a bit, shall we? On the 25th of April in 1982, so tomorrow's date, Defence Secretary John Nott announced that British forces had retaken South Georgia, and Margaret Thatcher made her famous Rejoice proclamation.
The commander of the operation has sent the following message. Be pleased to inform Her Majesty that the White Ensign flies alongside the Union Jack in South Georgia. God save the Queen.
What happens next? What is the not?
Thank you very much.
What's your reaction?
Just rejoice at that news and congratulate our forces and the Marines.
Are we going to declare war on Argentina, Mrs. Thatcher?
Rejoice.
Well, just to let you know before we continue that Pete Hegseth, the US Defence Secretary, is giving a speech at the Pentagon, a press conference at the Pentagon, in which he'll take questions as well. We'll keep an eye on it and dip in and out a little later. But I want to speak first to Donald Lamont, former British ambassador to Venezuela, former governor of the Falkland Islands and ex-CEO of Wilton Park. Give you all your titles, or at least some of them. Thank you for joining me today, yes. Donald. Hi. What's the situation on this? I mean, the UK government has said, you know, the sovereignty rests with the UK, end of story. If, God forbid, another attempt were to happen, another military attempt were to happen by Argentina, would the mood be the same in the nation to go and do what we did last time?
Well, I suppose I'm not sure if I'm the best commentator on the mood in the UK, but I think I can take myself back to 1982. I wasn't involved really directly in the conflict. I was sitting in the embassy in Moscow, in fact, when it happened, and it seemed almost surreal. But if I'm remembering correctly, the mood in Britain kind of at the time was pretty gloomy, I think. But suddenly the notion that kind of we were, or people we were responsible for, if you will, were under attack. The mood of the nation changed very quickly, and very quickly became supportive of the action that was being taken to recover the Falklands. So attitudes can change kind of quite quickly. And I also, I know this is not the question you asked me, so forgive me.
No, your reflections are welcome, whatever they are. Yeah.
But it just struck me that this idea kind of emerged as if people were locked in a closed room in the Pentagon to come up with ideas of kind of doing things to get back at NATO allies who'd not come up to scratch. And maybe part of the thinking, I mean, I think the idea should go back into that closed room along with the idea about Spain. But part of the thinking may have been that the Trump administration is kind of very supportive of President Milei of Argentina. Mm. But actually, he has not shown kind of, I mean, he has shown a preference for getting on with what he wants to do domestically on the economy and the political situation in his country, and that seems a sensible priority. So it really, as I say, the idea belongs back in that closed room.
But we've seen with Donald Trump, haven't we, that some of his ideas that we initially think are just jokes turn out not to be jokes. I mean, you look at Greenland, you know, the whole parliament was laughing at one point, like, genuinely hysterically laughing at the idea, and then it all got a bit more serious some months on, didn't it? What struck me when, and the reason I asked you the question I asked you was, you know, we were discussing on LBC just a week or so ago as to whether young people in this country had an appetite to protect this set of islands, let alone one thousands and thousands of miles away in the south.